champion, take control of the truth. Out of jail with your crack addicted niece.
Please get down on your knees and make sure that.
Service.
This is Michael Stinson in Hawaii. In politics, it is known as the burn rate, the speed at which a campaign spends the money it has raised. One AdWatch team estimates that the Bush campaign has already spent nearly half of its pre-convention advertising budget. With a poll showing George W. Bush even or slightly behind John Kerry, it means that the Bush campaign's huge financial advantage has now all but disappeared. Since early March, the Bush campaign has been advertising at a rate of $9 million a week, but the campaign is now cutting that in half after seeing Bush's election message, pushed aside by the attention around 9-1-1 and by the daily attacks on the American troops in Iraq. The bad news is overwhelming them right now, and I think they've got a predicament, said former Dean campaign manager and political analyst Joe Trippi. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld admitted Thursday that he had been surprised by the heavy toll in blood inflicted on American forces in recent days. The Pentagon chief asked at a news conference whether he had made any mistakes concerning the war in Iraq, came close to a rare admission of miscalculation, conceding that he failed to foresee the level of resistance facing U.S. forces in Iraq a full year after the fall of Baghdad. If someone had said, "Would you, a year ago, have expected you would be where you are at the present time?" one would not have described where we are, Rumsfeld said. I certainly would not have estimated that we would have had the number of individuals lost that we have in the last week. Spouses of soldiers from units in the 1st Armored Division already suspected that they were going to be told that their husbands or wives were going to be kept in Iraq for up to 4 more months, even though their supposedly one-year tours were finished. Some people were angry and didn't shed a tear, said Lisa Box, a family readiness group leader with Baumholder's 22nd Base Support Battalion in Germany. Others just totally fell apart. Spouses in both Baumholder and Wiesbaden, home to 1st AD units, said they were told by rear detachment commanders not to talk to the press. The wives said they feared that allowing their names to be used would cause them to lose their jobs on base or cause repercussions for their husbands downrange. More after this.
We got your liver.
How can they sit there and claim that they didn't know it was going to happen, but they've taken great care of us? Joe Sixpack ain't going to buy this.
I mean, Bush is running on the fact that he's kept us safe. On the other hand, everybody that speaks for the guy is saying another attack is going to happen, and we're never going to be able to stop it. It's going to happen.
These people are, quite frankly, flatly insane.
Insane.
UBTM Radio, on the web at TakeBackTheMedia.com.
A patrolman from Wisconsin left his opponents in a cloud of powdered sugar by downing 9.5 donuts in 3 minutes to win a donut-eating contest for police officers in suburban Chicago. Terry O'Brien of the police department in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, said he was destined to win Wednesday's contest because law enforcement runs in his family. The Dunkin' Donuts World Cup Donut-Eating Championship attracted 40 contestants from the USA and Canada. Master of Ceremonies Ed Nowicki said, "I thought they'd do 7 donuts, maybe they'd do 8. I couldn't believe 10. For Minuteman News Service, this is Michael Stinson in Hawaii.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Time for another report from the wide, 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 wild world of sports. Today's feature is about the amazing athletic contortions of New York politicians straining to please Mr. Robert Woody Johnson. Woody, as he's known to his sporting pals, is a billionaire heir to the Johnson & Johnson fortune and the present owner of a New York Jets pro football team. He's also a major league donor to such Republican politicos as New York Governor George Pataki and New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Now, Woody has a wish. He wants a brand new 75,000-seat football stadium on Manhattan's west side, a stadium with a retractable roof and a wraparound beehive of luxury skyboxes that he could lease to corporate high rollers. Of course, Woody is rich enough to build such a sports palace himself, but gosh, what's the use of being rich if you can't get your political pals to pony up some tax dollars for your private project? Thus, we recently witnessed the sports spectacle of Governor Pataki and Mayor Bloomberg leading an in-sweep for old Woody, promising $600 million in state and city money to help Woody score his stadium. The mayor even got into a cheerleader mode when the plan was announced, saying, "If you don't have a smile on your face today, you're never going to have one." I hate for reality to rain on Mike's pom-poms, but most New Yorkers are definitely not smiling. That's because Mike is the same mayor who says the city has no money for pay raises for police, who cannot find the funds to provide working toilets or even toilet paper for all of the public school children, who wants to cut $3 million from the city's infant mortality program and $15 million from foster care services, and who has already cut $21 million from public libraries, closing some branches 3 days a week. This is Jim Hightower saying, it's all a matter of political priorities. So who wants libraries when Woody wants a new stadium?
When you're the voice of reason, very few things get you excited. So you wouldn't expect something like a good price on a great copier to be one of them. But when the subject is a Xerox digital copier that delivers 35 quality pages a minute for a surprisingly low lease price of $134 a month and is so advanced it can be upgraded to scan, fax, and even email, well, that's enough to even make the voice of reason pick up the phone.
Call 1-800-ASK-XEROX for business lease details. Additional per copy charge.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello, relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec? Nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night.
The man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends. Happy Friday to you. Tom Hartman radio program, live coast to coast, border to border, streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite, beaming around the planet from radiopower.org. It looks like we're figuring out. Andy Borowitz has this great report here, this out of news. We're figuring out why it is that George Bush will not testify before the 9/11 Commission unless Dick Cheney can sit right next to him. And, you know, it apparently doesn't have anything to do with gay marriage or relationships or anything like that. Well, here's the Borowitz report. Cheney demands pay raise for doing Bush's voice. Vice President Dick Cheney today joined the cast of the animated series The Simpsons on the picket line, demanding a substantial pay raise for doing the voice of President George W. Bush. A spokesman for the vice president told reporters, "Vice President Cheney has been providing the voice for President Bush since January of 2001. All he wants is a salary that reflects that contribution." While it is not known what precise dollar figure the vice president is seeking, his spokesman said he is looking for, quote, "a salary in line with other performers who provide voices for cartoon characters," end quote. Some in Washington expressed surprise that Mr. Cheney, whose wealth is estimated at $87 billion, would ask for a pay raise. But not those who know him well, says Douglas Behan, author of the Cheney biography, The Ultimate Dick. "On the surface, Dick Cheney seems to have it all," he said. "Money, power, and an underground lair worthy of Goldfinger. But what he doesn't have is the kind of respect that Casey Kasem gets for doing the voice of Shaggy on Scooby-Doo," end quote. With Mr. Bush's appearance before the 9/11 Commission fast approaching, the White House was scrambling to find someone else to do President Bush's voice, with National Security Council advisor Condoleezza Rice emerging as a possible option, but not so fast as Mr. Bihan. Let's not forget, Condi didn't even want to do her own voice. So from BorowitzReport.com, our breaking news of the day. Speaking of Dick Cheney, you know, he was in Southeast Asia this week. And in South Korea yesterday. And his wife, Lynn, a politician of some note and, you know, on the board of several major multinational corporations, a wealthy and powerful woman, showed up at the Seoul American Elementary School. This is the on the Yongsong Army Garrison in South Korea. And she was going to talk about her 2000 book, America, A Patriotic Primer, or Primer, depending on where you grew up. Anyhow, one of the kids raised his hand and said, Mrs. Cheney, did your husband ever fight in a war? And after a moment or so, she said, well, he was in college, so he did not fight in a war. You'll recall, actually, during the election, Cheney said he had more important things to do than serve his nation during the Vietnam era. I'm not going to get into a screed about the number. Wolfowitz, Pearl, none of these guys served, and George W., you know, the National Guard, and then he didn't show up for a year. I really think that there is something to be said for the idea that, on the one hand, if the civilian commander-in-chief is going to send our forces into battle, particularly in a war that's a war of choice, when we were attacked by Japan in Pearl Harbor, there was functionally no choice. But if the commander-in-chief is going to do this, is going to assert that we should change 227 years of American history and policies to say, well, preemptive war is okay. Even though, I mean, literally going back to the Magna Carta, the idea has been that anybody who declares a preemptive war is considered, unless they can prove to the international community that they have grievances that are worthy of war, as we did in 1776 with this bill of grievances, a bill of particulars that was attached to the Declaration of Independence. The king has done this, and he 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 has done this, and it's so obvious that unless you've been attacked, essentially, then you're considered the aggressor. I mean, it's just, you know, this is international. First of all, it's international law. There are treaties and conventions and, you know, the United Nations and all this sort of thing. But it's also just been rational policy. You don't ever want to encourage any government to think that preemptive war is a rational course. We don't want to be saying to Pakistan, hey, you know, you get real upset with India, just attack them. Or to say that to India about Pakistan. Or to say that to China about Taiwan. So anyhow, you got a CEO who has never seen people die on the battlefield. A president who has never seen people die on the battlefield. And his, as we are now finding out, his senior military commanders were very, very reluctant and some openly opposed to going into Iraq until there was absolutely irrefutable evidence on the table. And that irrefutable evidence, if it existed, I mean, if Hans Blix, imagine if El Baradei or Hans Blix had come back from Iraq from an investigation and said, yep, sure enough, we found 40,000 pounds of sarin, and he's got missiles all set, and they've got a range to, they can, well, you know, George Bush actually on one occasion implied that they could strike the United States, not just on one occasion, but on multiple occasions. I've got a tape of one of the occasions. Yes, we've found, and he's got this stuff. Or he has got a nuclear weapon. You know, George Bush is famous. We can't wait for the final warning to be a mushroom cloud. He's got a nuclear weapon and he's got a missile. Now, Jack Kennedy knew that of the Soviet Union and still didn't think it was worth a war. Thank God. I mean, literally and reverentially. But if Hans Blix or Al-Baradei had come back to the United Nations as Resolution 1441 required, Resolution 1441 required that before any of the nations who were participants in this thing take action against Iraq, that first it had to be certified by either Al-Baradei or Blix that there was a threat, that there actually were weapons of mass destruction. And I can imagine. I mean, you have to use your imagination, unfortunately, because it's not what was real. But I can imagine that if Blix or Al-Baradei came back and said, yep, sure enough, that guy, he has nuclear weapons and he's capable of using them, and we think he's just nuts enough that he might. And this is, keep in mind, even the he's nuts enough that he might was a stretch. Before Saddam invaded Kuwait, he asked April Gillespie, the rough equivalent of the number two in our State Department office over there, the ambassador's assistant, what happens if we invade Kuwait? And she told him, well, we won't consider that any of our business. So, you know, this is a fact that's well known across the United States. It's also well known in the Middle East. And so I frankly think even if he had weapons that there would be some concern that there's a lot of countries that have these kind of weapons. I mean, Pakistan, a very unstable country. Lots of Muslims, if that's your fear. Anyhow, but I can imagine a situation where if we could demonstrate, if Blix had come back and said, yes, he's got the weapons, he's got a threat, that not only would the other countries of Europe have joined us, because they all said they were willing to, if these things were found. That's why they voted for the resolution for 1441. They said, yes, we'll participate. If you find evidence, just show us the evidence. If he's a threat, we'll take him out. And I would suspect, and this isn't just, you know, some wild speculation. This is based on the reality of what happened in 1991 when George Bush Sr. pulled this thing together, that the Arab nations of the region would get together and say, and we will participate too. We'll help you take him out. He killed 1 million people in his war with Iran. There were, you know, thousands, tens of thousands died in the invasion of Kuwait. We'll help you take him out. And then we would have had not just 130, we wouldn't have had 135,000 Americans sitting around like ducks, you know, sitting ducks in Iraq right now. We would have had Jordanian troops and Saudi troops and, well, maybe, you know, and UAE troops and Qatari troops and Kuwaiti troops and Indian troops and Pakistani troops and British troops. Well, we had the British troops and French troops and German troops. You would have had the world. We would have had the world with us. Would have been a no-brainer. Anyway, I digress. I wanted to finish up this Cheney stuff. Dick Cheney is, number one, he's making this trip to China. And he was stopped in South Korea on the way to China. What are we doing? This is... Do you know why Dick Cheney went to China? To serve as a PR spokesperson for Westinghouse Corporation, which wants to sell China 32 1-billion-watt reactors at a cost of $1.5 billion each. These are the types of reactors that can be used to produce plutonium. To China. and China, to a dictatorship. And China has missiles pointed at Taiwan. And at the same time, we're saying to the Taiwanese, hey, calm down, calm down. And now in the midst of this, you've got Korea, North Korea. I'm surprised this isn't making the front page of the newspapers. This was like on page 9. Prior to the kidnappings, North Korea and the nuclear threat were expected to be the main backdrop for Mr. Cheney's Asian trip. There is growing frustration with the administration's rigid approach to the problem. Chinese leaders who recently met with North Korean leader Kim Jong-il informed U.S. officials, the onus was on the United States to show more flexibility, end quote. The administration's strategy is to insist that North Korea completely dismantle its nuclear program before offering any concessions to the state. Meanwhile, the crisis is escalating. North Korea recently declared the Bush administration was, quote, This is Kim Jong-il speaking through his newspaper, right? Quote, the Bush administration was driving the military situation on the Korean Peninsula to the brink of a nuclear war. Well, here's a guy who really does have them and who's threatening to use them. He doesn't have any oil, however. Got to keep that in mind. 20 minutes past the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America, Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. New analysis from researchers at the University of California at Berkeley portend a troublesome future for workers in Silicon Valley. They predict 1 in 6 current high-tech jobs in the Valley could be sent overseas in the coming years. For the total U.S. workforce, the risk of being outsourced is 1 in 10. They also forecast a rise in offshoring for more clerical-type work, like jobs involving paralegal skills or the processing of medical and insurance claims.
If elected, I'll lie about weapons of mass destruction as a pretext to invade another country.
I'll call myself an environmentalist and gut clean air standards.
Our allies will go from respecting us to hating us, and I don't care.
I'll leave no child behind, unless they can't afford it.
I promise to keep you in a state of fear and anxiety, so you never question what we're doing.
And if you do, we'll call you unpatriotic.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single
single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the Pro version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Riding around in my Hummer, I never feel insecure. Everybody knows just where I stand on blood and guts and gore. And since I have to buy more gas every 10 miles or so, I sure am glad we got Iraqi oil to keep me on the go.
And welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. It's Tom Hartman with you. The Center, the Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, just to wrap up our Dick Cheney alert here this morning, has written a letter to John Ashcroft requesting that he appoint a special prosecutor to investigate Vice President Dick Cheney. This was in the Wall Street Journal today. Dick Cheney's possible involvement with bribes paid to Nigerian officials by a consortium that included Halliburton subsidiary KBR, Kellogg Brown & Root, while Cheney was the CEO of Halliburton. This was involved a $4 billion contract, and the French are looking into this right now. In fact, they've notified us that they may be prosecuting him. And Halliburton actually filed a form called an 8K. It's the 8K form with the Securities and Exchange Commission on January 21st, 2004, saying that they were being investigated for this bribery thing. It took place between 1995 and 2002, the same period during which Mr. Cheney served as Halliburton's CEO. And that's when the payments were made. And French authorities discussed, it just goes through a whole long thing. But anyhow, this group is saying to Ashcroft, put an independent prosecutor in here. You know, this administration can't investigate itself. So we'll see what happens with Ashcroft. The Middle East, remarkable situation, George Bush coming out a couple of days ago. I wanted to talk about this. I also want to talk about Osama bin Laden and what's going on. This situation and how the bizarre politics of Iraq are playing out with Sistani and Sadr, which is fascinating. But here we have, first of all, the Chicago Tribune running this piece by Evan Osnos. Bush's shift seen as blow to roadmap for peace. The prestige of the Bush administration, this is Walid Kazai, political scientist at the American University in Cairo. He says the prestige of the Bush administration was extremely low, but this will take it another step down the spiral. And what he's talking about is that the George Bush basically undercut, by agreeing with Ariel Sharon unilaterally, absolutely unilaterally, to a couple of things, and we'll get to those in just a second. Basically, what he did was he undercut the ability of the Palestinians and the Israelis to negotiate. Because they just, you know, for example, the right of return. The Palestinians have been saying, hey, you know, we want this right of return back to Israel. Well, of course, you know, they're not going to get it. And they know that they're not going to get it. Everybody knows that they're not going to get it. And the assumption had always been that when the time comes to sit down and seriously negotiate this stuff, and some would say, well, the time is long past. Yeah, okay. But still, this has to be worked out politically. It's not going to be worked out militarily. That they would have this as a card, a face-saving card that they could put on the table and say, well, here we go. You know, we'll give you that. You give us something else. And Bush, you know, without any consultation with the Palestinians, says, okay, that's it. We're agreeing with Sharon. There is no right of return. This essentially dismantled the roadmap. this whole roadmap for peace. You know, he took it apart. It's just remarkable. The suggestions that he endorsed violate United Nations Security Council resolutions 446, 455, 465, 471, 242, and 338. Not to mention the international rules that say that you can't move civilians into a territory that you've taken by military force, that you're militarily occupying. And so it's just this is a real dangerous situation, and I think George Bush has been dragged into some very simplistic thinking on this. And I mean, there are serious arguments on both sides of this. Israel's facing some terrible problems. So are the Palestinians. And just going off like this is extremely destructive to the peace process. And the hawks in Israel are loving it, but they're a minority. And the majority, the moderates and the liberals in Israel are very worried about this. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The White House wants yet another round of corporate tax cuts. It believes cutting the tax burden on business stimulates job growth. But historical analysis of U.S. federal tax rates and unemployment recently completed by the Brookings Institution shows no basis for the correlation. Look no further than the Reagan era. He cut taxes in 1981, and in the following 2 years, unemployment went up. Over the decade, taxation slowly rose again, and by 1989, the unemployment rate had fallen.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
In what the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission calls its largest collective case ever, 511 women who worked or still work for the largest Burger King franchise in the country say they were victims of sexual harassment. The complaints come from females in 13 states where Syracuse, New York-based Carrolls Corporation owns Burger King restaurants. They all claim franchise managers did everything from make suggestive comments to fondle them in the kitchen. Carrolls Corporation calls the EEOC investigation a fishing expedition, but the government says more than two-thirds of the claims can be cross-referenced to managers who moved within the company and apparently took their harassment with them wherever they went, which makes the initial complaints more substantive than the norm.
Nike's labor record is under fire again this week. Four major union organizations in the United States and Canada sent a letter to the United Nations calling on UN Secretary General Kofi Annan to review and possibly revoke Nike's affiliation with the UN Global Compact. Adam Lee, Strategic Campaigns and International Affairs Department Coordinator for the United Steelworkers of America Union.
As a participant, it's expected to uphold certain kinds of fundamental labor rights, including freedom of association and respect for collective bargaining.
Before Nike purchased Canadian hockey apparel maker Bauer, none of Nike's 23,000 employees were unionized. Now Nike has announced plans to shut down two Bauer facilities and drastically downsize a third, resulting in hundreds of job losses.
Following pressure from civil rights groups, the federal agency in charge of handling discrimination and whistleblower complaints from the government workforce has reinstituted its commitment to protect gay and lesbian workers from harassment on the job. In January, the U.S. Office of Special Counsel revamped its discrimination and employees' rights handbook and complaint forms, removing all references to sexual orientation. That left many with the impression that anti-discrimination laws on the books since 1978 that prohibit discrimination based on sexual preference would no longer be enforced. Yesterday, the OSC's literature and forms were changed again, and all references to protection for gay and lesbian workers were restored. No reason given for the reversal. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. As the U.S. Labor Department moves to restrict overtime qualifications for 8 million workers, it is also collecting a record amount of unpaid overtime from worker-filed complaints. Just last year, the Labor Department collected $212 million worth of these claims, a 10-year high, distributing payments to some 342,000 claimants. Meanwhile, the number of overtime-related lawsuits have doubled over the last 2 years.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
I get up every morning and ignore the global warming. Head out to the Oval Office, start my day. I keep my donors all protected so I can be re-elected. Give them access just as long as they pay.
It's the George Bush song.
The corporate crooks who keep cooking up the books. We make sure we look the other way. The laws are theirs to break, long as I still get my take. My war chest keeps on growing each day. And I've been taking care of business every day.
And the Bush administration taking care of it. Actually, not taking care of small business, not taking care of medium-sized businesses, not taking care of the businesses that are really the heartbeat of America, that keep America strong and keep America growing, just taking care of the large monopolies that that line the pockets of this administration. I just want to wrap this thing up with regard to Israel and Palestine, because I consider myself a close friend of Israel. I've spent a lot of time in Israel. I've worked in Israel. I've participated in putting together one of the larger child care programs in that country. And I've worked in the Arab world, and I'm familiar with the Arab world, relatively. And it seems to me that there's just this a very clear, number one, you know, of course, the Palestinians. This, for years and years, the Palestinians, the PLO had as part of its constitution, as I recall, that Israel didn't have a right to exist. And even to the extent that they've kind of negotiated that away and said, okay, you have a right to exist now, there's still this pervasive mythos within part of the Palestinian community or part of the larger Arab community, for that matter, that, you know, really the thing that we need to do is just push the Jews into the sea, sort of thing, you know, get rid of Israel. And they have to drop that. I mean, you know, they just, like, you know, an end to that, and end the terrorist attacks. I mean, this is just common sense. It doesn't seem that way there. And you say, well, oppressed people, they feel the need to fight back. Gandhi represented, you know, 700 million, 500 million during his day of some of the most oppressed people in the world. The British ruled India with an absolute iron fist. An absolute iron fist. I mean, executions for minor infractions. It was outrageous what the British did, particularly during the years that the British East India Company was primarily responsible. Thomas Yale, one of the Yale brothers who brought back his fortune from India working for the East India Company and renamed, I forget the name of the college before it got renamed as Yale University. Anyhow, imagine if Gandhi's style of nonviolence had been adopted by the Palestinians. Fewer people would have died. I mean, you know, instead of sending a suicide, okay, if you want to make the decision to have that somebody wants to be a martyr, which, you know, I don't think is necessarily the wisest decision. I don't think that Martin Luther King, when he set out to do what he did, was hoping that anybody would die. People did die as a result of King's efforts. And I'm sure he knew that that was a price that may have to be paid. And Gandhi knew that that was a price that would have to be paid. But you've got people in the Palestinian camp right now who are saying, okay, we have people who are willing to die for this. It would be so much more effective if instead of strapping dynamite on themselves and getting on a bus in Jerusalem, they were to sit down in front of a tank, like that young man in Tiananmen Square did. Well, that didn't quite work, but it did work in India. I mean, it hasn't been pushed. It's an ongoing process, let's say. But it did work in India. It did work in the United States. It did. I would suggest even it did work against the Roman Empire 2,000 years ago, to a large extent. The idea of nonviolence. And that would have brought the world together behind the Palestinians. Instead of... And then the other thing, of course, is that we're giving, I believe the number is $9 to $10 billion a year in aid. It might be $8 billion. to Israel, the largest recipient of our foreign aid, now Iraq is. And the second largest is Egypt, which is just a billion or so short of what Israel is getting. And, you know, that's fine with me. You go back and you see that the Egypt started getting all this foreign aid basically during the Jimmy Carter era when Sadat came to the table and said, okay, I will renounce my essentially war, state of war with Israel, and we'll negotiate with these people. We should be offering this kind of a carrot to the Palestinians as well. Help them rebuild their society. You can do a lot in a little country. I mean, we're talking countries the size of New Jersey. You can do a lot in a little country with $6-8 billion a year. You can do just a mind-boggling a lot. And instead, we're pursuing this.
It's my way or the highway. We're going to come in here with guns, and that's it.
Which leads us to Osama bin Laden. And if you know, if you've got thoughts on this, 1-866-889-8894 is our phone number. Bin Laden has made his truce offer. Give me a break. Give me a break. Here's this guy. You know, running around Pakistan with his dialysis machine and his camel, and is probably 10 or 15 people. Well, you know, it's actually probably several thousand by now. And bin Laden needs the same thing that George Bush needed on September 10th, just before 9/11. He needs an enemy. He needs publicity. He wanted, you know, he had this fantasy of becoming the leader of the Arab world. I'm gonna be the guy. I'm gonna prove it all. I'm gonna show you all. I'm gonna make it. And so now he comes along. He says, "Well, I can be reasonable too." I suspect most people didn't actually read bin Laden's so-called offer. But I think it's interesting. I think it's interesting as a strategic move. But what it says to me is the whole superhero thing, that in movies, in literature, in novels, in fiction, the strength of a hero can never be greater, or let me re-say that, the strength of the hero is defined by the strength of his enemy. In other words, if you had Superman, and Superman just, you know, could fly around, do everything, X-ray vision and everything, and was invincible, it would be a really boring story. So you got to have kryptonite. You got to have an evil genius. You have Batman and Robin, and they have all these technology and all these powers and things and abilities and smarts. It would be really boring. They're in Gotham City. Okay, they took out a couple muggers last week. Boring story. No. You got to have the Penguin. You got to have the Joker. You got to have the Iceman. You got to have supervillains if you want to be a superhero. And George Bush needed a super villain in order to make himself a superhero. Now, this is something Bill Clinton could have done with Tim McVeigh. In fact, that's what McVeigh was expecting. You read the Turner Diaries, the novel, which is the marching song, the mantra of the ultra-right in the United States. I mean, the fringe, lunatic fringe of the right. Thinking that in that book, in that novel, they've, you know, sort of the Atlas Shrugged to the right. This guy bombs the Murrow Building in Oklahoma City, the federal building. And the government and the president says, we have an enemy. We have evil people among us. These white Christians, we've got to stomp them out. And it causes all the white Christians to rise up and you know. And that's what Tim McVeigh actually believed was going to happen. And Bill Clinton said, this guy's no big deal. He's a crook. He's a criminal. He's a murderer. You know, we'll put him in jail. If the jury decides, we'll execute him. No big deal. We don't need a state of war. Osama bin Laden comes after us. And... oh, no, we've got to have... It's we've got to have this giant evil empire. He's got to be huge. He was a guy with maybe 20,000 followers. The entire world was with us and would have gone after him. And we said to them, no thanks, we'll do this alone, because we've got Super George. Well, I think this is what Bin Laden is trying to do. I think he's trying to do the same thing. And, of course, the Europeans just said, hey, give me a break. Not a chance. German Chancellor Gerhard Schroeder, any attempt to split Europe will fail. The Wall Street Journal notes, Mr. Bin Laden's attempt to portray himself as a more reasonable figure and defender of Muslim lands is likely to resonate more in places such as Iraq, Saudi Arabia, and Pakistan. And I'm telling you, it will. This is PR. He's playing to his base. And his base, you know, grows when he plays to it. He's at a time when U.S. troops fighting in Iraq are being portrayed as aggressors on popular Middle East satellite channels. From today's Wall Street Journal article by David S. Cloud. And here's what Bin Laden said. I offer a truce to Europe and agree wholeheartedly to stop operations against any state which promises to stop attacking Muslims or interfering in their affairs. Acceptance of the truce starts with the withdrawal of the last soldier from our land. See, he's portraying himself as like the defender of Islamic nations. And prior to Bush attacking Iraq, I mean, even after we went into Afghanistan, we still had most of the Islamic nations around the world with us. Prior to our invasion of Iraq, most of the Muslim world did not, most of the Islamic world did not consider Bin Laden to be their leader, their hero. But now he's speaking as if he is, and increasingly across the Islamic world because of our invasion and occupation of a land which had not threatened us. Or at least in 2 decades. I mean, it was not a threat to us. Acceptance of the truce starts with the withdrawal of the last soldier from our land. The door is open for 3 months. And he says, whoever rejects this truth and chooses war, we are war's sons. But whoever wants this truce, here we offer it. See, it's the same mindset. He goes on to say, what happened on September 11 and March 11, this March 11 being Madrid, are your goods returned to you to make you understand that everyone wants security? Yeah, right. Yeah, here's Bin Laden trying to rationalize this stuff. Oh, I'm the great Democrat. And it will play to his base, particularly given that we have stepped into the briar patch that he laid for us. Our actions are responses to your actions, destroying and killing our people in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Palestine. You need look no further than the event that shocked the world, the killing of the elderly wheelchair-bound Sheikh Ahmed Yassin. God have mercy on him. For this alone we have pledged to all that is most holy to take revenge on America. Polls show this. Osama bin Laden quoting polls? Polls show Europeans want peace. And we urge academics, media people, activists, and businessmen to form some kind of council to inform European citizens. Yeah, right. Stop shedding our blood to save your own. He goes on. And then he wraps this thing up. He says, surely rational people will not squander their safety, wealth, and families to appease the White House liar. He thinks he can insert himself into presidential politics. You know, Kerry, of course, agrees with Bush. Come on, this guy's off the wall. President Bush, leaders in this sphere, big media institutions, corporations, and also the United Nations, all of them are a fatal danger to our world. And then he goes into a rant about the Zionist lobby. But the point of it is, you know, there's this debate going on about what's he trying to do with this thing? What is his goal? I think his goal is simply to raise his own standard. He's struggling for his own existence on a local basis. And the problem is that we're making it easier for him. It's just a very unfortunate thing. 1-866-889-8894. Dave in Eureka, California. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program. What's
up? Hey, Tom. With your help, we continue our efforts to unravel the massive hoax that's being
perpetrated against us.
Which hoax is that, Dave?
Oh, the mass deceptions. I think the basic assumption that you just can't steal enough money to satisfy you. I thought the tune you played after the last break, the Bush song there, that came real quick. That's a big piece of the puzzle in our effort to unravel this thing.
Yeah, let me just, Dave, share with you our quote for the day, by the way. It's from Franklin Roosevelt, a speech that he gave on September 22, 1936. He said, in the truest sense, freedom cannot be bestowed, it must be achieved. Thought for the day. And, pardon me, you were saying.
Wow, well, that was a good side thought. But one of the things in trying to unravel this difficulty in the Middle East, Israelis discovered many years ago that America had some of the finest politicians that money can buy. And so the lobbyists from Israel have been doing just that for the longest time. And we've been sending...
Dave, Israel is not alone in that. China is doing the same thing.
I mean,
you got Dick Cheney in China, you know, right now or yesterday, you know, cutting deals. It's... I'm assuming that where you're going with this is the old let's blame Israel for this.
No, I'm not buying it. They just realized, and they're intelligent, resourceful people, that we had this fact that you could buy our politicians. And so if you look at the balance of power in the Middle East, it's obvious that we have very well-equipped, well-armored Israelis and mostly Arabs throwing stones, and they are very, very angry with us for the part we've played in creating that.
I got it, Dave. I got it. And that's why I suggest we should be giving them more foreign aid. I appreciate the call. It's Tom Hartman, 10 minutes before the hour.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
expanding oil and gas drilling in the West is pitting one business interest against others. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Oil and gas development is rapidly spreading in western states, raising tension between the industry and local ranchers and business people. Scott Woodruff operates the Lander Llama Company Wilderness Expeditions. He offers backcountry trips on federal lands in the Wind River and Absarca Ranges in western Wyoming.
I'm not directly affected as of yet. However, it is moving our direction, and I think now is the time to say enough is enough in terms of a rapid expansion without any consideration to the long-term economic loss from visual values.
Like others in the region, Woodruff is not opposed to oil and gas development in general.
However, I am opposed to multiple-use extraction on public lands at the expense of the physical and economic values the Red Desert, for example, offers. To suggest one economic value is more important than the other at the expense of eliminating the visual resource value and possibly the physical environmental value forever, that seems to be an unacceptable multiple-use management plan.
Outdoor recreation, including hunting, fishing, and hiking, is Wyoming's second leading industry behind mining and drilling. But critics say federal policy favors the oil and gas industry over these local businesses. Woodruff says outfits such as his can't survive without unspoiled views and without the wildlife. He says we can't afford to ruin the last of these open spaces in our quest for energy.
I think Aldo Leopold said it best, having to squeeze the last drop of utility out of the land has the same desperate finality as having to chop up the furniture to keep warm.
That's Scott Woodruff, owner of the Lander Llama Company in Lander, Wyoming. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman. 5 minutes before the hour. I got to say, Cambiosa, I think, in the chat room. Our chat room, by the way, you can get to TomHartman.com. Just click on the chat link and takes you to the Democratic Forum on CompuServe and drop into the chat room there. Said, come on, you know, what about that American woman Rachel who was shot, you know, and bulldozed? She was bulldozed. You know, it won't work. Well, one incident, no, it won't work. But over and over and over again, yes, it does. It absolutely does. There were incidences in Norway where the Nazis backed down in the face of nonviolent opposition. There were incidences in Germany. I'll pull them out. We'll get into it next week. Where the wives of men who had been she wasn't shot. She was bulldozed. The wives of men who had been Jewish men who had been taken by the Nazis held a vigil over and over, day after day after day. As I recall, it was in Berlin. It may have been in Nuremberg. And the Nazis relented and gave these guys back. Now, of course, you know, over a long period of time, that ultimately didn't work. But in Germany, I mean, because this was within the country. But you don't know. I mean, if Germany had won World War II and over a 20-year period, and look at how long this thing's been going on between Palestine and Israel, a nonviolent opposition had arisen. I suspect that I just don't think fascistic states can last. History tells us they don't last over a long period of time. Anyway, 1-866-889-8894. Neil in Illinois is on the line. Hey, Neil, what's up?
Hey, hello.
Yeah, you're on the air.
Yeah, Tom, I appreciate you taking my call, and I really support your views. A long-time listener. And make the most sense of most of the people I listen to. And I'm inspired by your views on nonviolent opposition, which I think is a very important concept that ought to be promoted. But two things come to mind. One is, number one, with your foreign aid that goes to Israel and wanting to get money to the Palestinians to promote this nonviolent issue, I was wondering if that could be seen as supporting a terrorist group and come under government scrutiny. And number two,
Let me just answer your number one real quickly. Yes, it could, and that's a problem. That's why the Palestinians need to renounce violence. And there's actually a large movement within the Palestinian community for nonviolence. It's a growing nonviolence. It doesn't get much press coverage, but it's there. Daniel Dresner has written about it extensively. Your number two point. I'm sorry, Neil. I'm out of time here. Well. Give me a call back in the third hour of the program. We can get back into this stuff. We got Bernie coming up. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. The True People's Radio.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Michael Stinson in Hawaii. In politics, it is known as the burn rate, the speed at which a campaign spends the money it has raised. One Ad Watch team estimates that the Bush campaign has already spent nearly half of its pre-convention advertising budget. With a poll showing George W. Bush even or slightly behind John Kerry, it means that the Bush campaign's huge financial advantage has now all but disappeared. Since early March, the Bush campaign has been advertising at a rate of $9 million a week, but the campaign is now cutting that in half after seeing Bush's election message, pushed aside by the attention around 9/11 and by the daily attacks on the American troops in Iraq. The bad news is overwhelming them right now, and I think they've got a predicament, said former Dean campaign manager and political analyst Joe Trippi. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld admitted Thursday that he had been surprised by the heavy toll in blood inflicted on American forces in recent days. The Pentagon chief asked at a news conference whether he had made any mistakes concerning the war in Iraq, came close to a rare admission of miscalculation, conceding that he failed to foresee the level of resistance facing U.S. forces in Iraq a full year after the fall of Baghdad. If someone had said, "Would you, a year ago, have expected you would be where you are at the present time?" one would not have described where we are, Rumsfeld said. "I certainly would not have estimated that we would have had the number of individuals lost that we have in the last week." Spouses of soldiers from units in the 1st Armored Division already suspected that they were going to be told that their husbands or wives were going to be kept in Iraq for up to 4 more months, even though their supposedly one-year tours were finished. "Some people were angry and didn't shed a tear," said Lisa Box, a family readiness group leader with Baumholder's 22nd Base Support Battalion in Germany. "Others just totally fell apart." Spouses in both Baumholder and Wiesbaden, home to 1st AD units, said they were told by rear detachment commanders not to talk to the press. The wives said they feared that allowing their names to be used would cause them to lose their jobs on base or cause repercussions for their husbands downrange. More after this.
We got you.
How can they sit there and claim that they didn't know it was going to happen, but they've taken great care of us? Joe Sixpack ain't going to buy this.
I mean, Bush is running on the fact that he's kept us safe. On the other hand, everybody that speaks for the guy is saying another attack is going to happen, and we're never going to be able to stop it. It's going to happen.
These people are, quite frankly, flatly insane.
Insane.
TBTM Radio, on the web at takebackthemedia.com.
A patrolman from Wisconsin left his opponents in a cloud of powdered sugar by downing 9.5 donuts in 3 minutes to win a donut-eating contest for police officers in suburban Chicago. Terry O'Brien of the police department in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, said he was destined to win Wednesday's contest because law enforcement runs in his family. The Dunkin' Donuts World Cup Donut-Eating Championship attracted 40 contestants from the USA and Canada. Master of Ceremonies Ed Nowicki said, "I thought they'd do 7 donuts, maybe they'd do 8. I couldn't believe 10. For Minuteman News Service, this is Michael Stinson in Hawaii.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Warning. Being a top corporate official at Tyco International can be hazardous to your health. Apparently, being an executive there triggers the greed gene, which grows out of control and totally engulfs any sense of personal and corporate propriety. For the past couple of years, we've watched the disgraceful spectacle of Dennis Kozlowski, Tyco's former CEO, who lavished company-paid luxuries on himself while the company was tanking. In the last year of Kozlowski's regal reign, shareholders lost $80 billion, while Dennis wallowed in a $30 million Fifth Avenue apartment bought and furnished with Tyco money. His furnishings included a $6,000 shower curtain. Imagine, $6,000 for a shower curtain. Could you even let it get wet? But Dennis got ousted as well as indicted, and the new Tyco said that it would henceforth be a paragon of corporate virtue. To help put a bit of walk to that talk, some Tyco shareholders, led by the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees Union, offered 2 proposals at the corporation's annual meeting. The first was to bring Tyco home. Even though the company is physically located in the U.S., Kozlowski was one of those runaway CEOs who reincorporated in the notorious tax haven of Bermuda. This legalistic shell game lets Tyco escape paying millions of dollars it would otherwise owe in taxes. Money to pay for its share of the cost of our nation's infrastructure, military, and other benefits Tyco enjoys. Top executives of the new Tyco, however, sided with the ethics of the old Tyco, defeating the move to repatriate the company. The honcho's response to the second proposal was also very Kozlowskian. It called for a pay limit of $1 million a year for the chief executive. "No," shouted the CEO as forcefully as possible, defeating the move and maintaining Tyco's old ethic of always take care of number one. This is Jim Hightower saying, in corporate world, the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling?
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 7 minutes past the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast, streaming down from outer space in the Sirius satellite, beaming around the planet on radiopower.org. With archives at WhiteRoseSociety.com, you can find it all at TomHartman.com. It was fascinating. What, last 3-4 days ago, we had somebody actually call in from Italy, listening on the internet. The reach of these new technologies is absolutely mind-boggling. Anyhow, it's the second hour of our Friday program. and which is one of my favorite hours of the week, and I know it is for many of our listeners, probably most of our listeners. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. In 1991, Bernie Sanders became the first independent congressman elected in 40 years to the House of Representatives. He has since been reelected five times, the longest-serving independent in the history of the House of Representatives. I think of him, even though he's my congressman, because I live here in Vermont, I think of Bernie Sanders as America's congressman, and I know a lot of people across the United States do. Bernie, welcome back.
Good to be with you, Tom, and I'm talking to you from Pasadena, California, where I want to tell you people are listening to the show in California, so congratulations on getting the word out.
That's great. Thank you, Bernie. In the last hour, I was talking about the Palestinian and Israeli situation, how number one, Bush, by just going along with Sharon on these things and basically unilaterally making decisions, has short-circuited his own negotiating process, which seemed to me diplomatically a huge blunder. And in fact, you know, violating the whole notion of the UN resolution of, I'd have to go back and look at the year, but that you can't move civilians into a territory that's being militarily occupied. You just don't do that. And secondly, my suggestion that, you know, back when Jimmy Carter pulled together Sadat and Begin to negotiate, we had been giving Israel $8, $9, $10 billion a year in foreign aid, and Egypt had been getting very little, you know, $500 million, $1 billion, something like that. And basically the carrot that they gave to Sadat to drop his declaration of war against Israel was we jacked him up to the point where I believe he's the second largest recipient, Egypt now, Sadat is dead, of course, but that Egypt is the second largest recipient of American foreign aid in the world. Well, Iraq now, of course, is number one, but so that makes him number three. And there's this growing nonviolence and peace movement among the Palestinians, and I was thinking we really ought to be supporting those folks. I mean, that's, you know, shift the support off Egypt and onto that community. What are your thoughts on that and the whole situation in general?
Well, I think taking place in the midst of the very, very, very difficult situation in Iraq, what Bush did is a huge mistake. We're looking at a time when a recent, as you may have seen this, Pell International poll shows that in Pakistan, two-thirds of the people in Pakistan, look favorably upon Osama bin Laden. 7% look favorably on Bush. What do you think this action is going to do to that?
Yeah, and these are very different numbers than we were seeing before the invasion of Iraq, by the way.
That's right. And that's the same, not quite as bad, but it's terrible in Jordan, it's terrible in Saudi Arabia. So what this does very firmly, I think, tell the Muslim people, the Arab people, that the United States is not going to be a fair power broker, a fair broker in this whole path to peace. But they were coming down very much on one side, and I think that's only going to exacerbate what is already a terrible, terrible problem.
Yeah, and I think we both have to make very clear the caveat that we're both supporters of the state of Israel and
right.
its right to exist.
Right. And the other point that you made, that it subverts the kinds of negotiations that are necessary between Israel and the Palestinian Authority can't be overstated. What the United States has said, you don't have to negotiate. This is what we believe. We're not going to be an entity trying to bring opposing sides together. We're really on one side. So I think it's a dangerous precedent. I think it's going to add more fuel to the anti-American sentiment in the Arab world, and that's exactly what we don't need right now.
Yeah. Do you think that an Arab nonviolence movement, a Martin Luther King, Mahatma Gandhi type of, I mean, look at how many people have died among the Palestinians in suicide bombings. If that same number of people had died, and I, not that I'm an advocate of death, but had died in front of tanks and whatnot in nonviolent demonstrations, don't you think the world would be far more outraged?
Let me just answer your question by saying that I think nonviolence will do more to win the support of people throughout the world than suicide bombings.
Yeah, and that, I guess that's the bottom line of my point. Bernie, what's on, you know, I've got a few news stories here, but I know that you've got probably a list of things you'd like to talk about.
Let's just talk about Iraq, because I think Iraq is on everybody's mind.
Okay, but let me give our phone number out, too, before our phone number, 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to be on and talk with Congressman Bernie Sanders. Okay, back to you, Bernie.
I think if you look at the Bush analysis of why we went into Iraq, in almost every instance, they have been dead wrong. They told us, and let's not forget it, that we went into Iraq to protect the American people from a potential attack from weapons of mass destruction. Turned out not to be true. They told us that we went into Iraq because Saddam Hussein was allied with Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda, and there were implications that Iraq had a role in 9/11. That was not true. You will recall the vice president and others saying, well, look, we're going to go into Iraq. We're going to be greeted as liberators. They're going to be throwing flowers at us, perhaps something similar to the liberation of France.
Yeah, Dick
certainly not true.
Yep.
They told us this would take weeks, not months. And as you know, Tom, I mean, tragically, every day that we pick up the paper, we're understanding that just this last several weeks, we have lost more Americans than at any time since the invasion. And we're looking at over 600 now who are dead, and four or five times that number who are wounded. Just in the last few weeks in Fallujah, what I read is that over 600 Iraqis, including many women and children, have been killed, others wounded, massive destruction.
Yeah, and Al Jazeera is plastering their pictures all over their websites and on their and on Arab TV, on these Arab satellite channels that are beamed from the Philippines to Qatar.
That's right.
And it's really not working in our advantage.
So the point is now the Bush line, which is completely different, is, well, the goal is to rebuild Iraq, make it a bastion of democracy and prosperity, and this is going to spread the good word all over the Middle East and make everybody like the United States and work against terrorism. Obviously, it doesn't take a genius to know that if you're watching Arab television, if you're seeing women and children getting killed, if you're seeing American troops doing the shooting, this is not going to endear the average Arab to the United States. And in fact, tragically, and this is, we can't underestimate how tragic this is, in many ways, Bush is falling into Osama bin Laden's trap, making it easier for him to rally especially young, impoverished Arabs to his hellish and demagogic cause. Fighting terrorism, in my view, and I've said this many, many times, is not easy. It is not easy, no matter who is the president of the United States. But clearly, the direction that Bush is taking us now is only going to engender, in my view, enormous opposition and make the struggle against terrorism that much worse.
Congressionally, it's going to take me a second to find it, but your colleague, Pat Leahy, today, I got an email from him, I'm assuming it went to anybody who's communicated with him in the past, and there was a story about him in the Burlington Free Press this morning where he was saying, just flat out, the Bush invasion of Iraq has made the United States less safe, and that the cost in terms of dollars and blood was not worth it. Just flat out, Pat Leahy saying.
Well, I think the situation is worse.
Yeah.
As I mentioned before.
Do you think Congress is getting this, though? I mean, right across.
Well, Congress has been on recess now for a week and a half, so we'll see what happens when we get back. But I can't help but believe that obviously those of us who oppose the war are dismayed but not shocked by what's happening. But I have to think that a number of members who swallowed Bush's line, who swallowed his approach, are now shaking their heads and are saying, this isn't working, we've got to rethink it. The difficulty is, I think, that in order to do the right thing in a very difficult and complicated situation, I just don't see how this president is going to be doing it, given his point of view.
Yeah, the problem seems to be that I just got into this a little bit in the first hour, that if I mean, Resolution 1441 said, we're going to send the inspectors in. They're going to look for weapons of mass destruction. If they find them, if they find that Iraq represents a threat to its neighbors, then the United Nations will act. And if they, if Hans Blix had come back and said, hey, guess what? He's got bombs and he's got missiles. Then not only, it wouldn't have been just us and England. It would have been us and England and Jordan and Pakistan and India and many, you know, you'd have Muslim-speaking or Arabic-speaking soldiers.
This is the problem. And I think the difficulty now is Bush has gotten us into such a quagmire that he's not going to be able to get us out. And I think when we look at the presidential election coming up, certainly this is going to be one of the key issues, because in order to begin to make some progress, there is no question that we're going to have to internationalize the situation. In the short term, at least, we're going to need help from the Muslim countries with Muslim troops to try to bring stability to the country, try to help rebuild it. We're going to have to inform the rest of the world that it's not only going to be Halliburton and other American companies that are going to do the rebuilding, and then we're going to have to leave as quickly as we can once we've brought a degree of stability and some type of governmental structure to that country. The problem right now is that is not Bush's point of view, and Bush is not going to be reaching out to the rest of the world. He's still a go-it-alone approach. And I just don't see any solutions moving in that direction.
I've seen op-ed pieces recently, both on the right and on the left, interestingly enough, suggesting that the history of the region says that the only way that we can make a transition, a successful transition, is to put in a strong man, at least over the short term. Do you think that there's some validity to that?
I don't know. I mean, you have a very, very chaotic situation in a country that has not experienced democracy, but I hope that we could do better than that. But when you talk about conservative opposition to the war, and you're going to see it, the truth of the matter is, if you are an honest conservative who believes in a limited role for government, you do not believe that the United States should be engaged in nation building, which, as you recall, was what Bush criticized Clinton for very strongly. And if we're not engaged in nation building now, I don't know what nation building is, right?
Yep.
If you're a conservative worried about a $500 billion deficit and a $7 trillion national debt, you are not supportive of spending several hundred billion dollars on Iraq when we have children sleeping out on the street in the United States.
Got to hold it there, Bernie. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Stay tuned.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
You know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
The war they are in has been declared over by the same man who lied them into it. Their reward? Combat pay cut in half. $1.5 billion cut to their family housing. $20 billion cut to military health care. No health care for reservists.
My answer is bring them on.
Thousands wounded, hundreds dead, and no end in sight. If we support our troops, why can't Bush? Or is this what they mean when they say, an army of one?
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, hi. How you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
And who's gonna pay the bill? Who's gonna pay the bill? Not Rush Limbaugh, not George Will, not those chicken hawks on Capitol Hill, not the tax cut billionaires, you know the drill. You're gonna pay the bill.
That's a good song there for the day after tax day, Bernie. We got the statistic yesterday. The average worker takes home $517 a week in the United States. The average CEO takes home $155,789 every week.
And that split, that spread between CEO and worker is far higher than it used to be in this country, and is by far the highest in the world.
Yeah, it's absolutely mind-boggling. We have Xavier on the line, 1-866-889-8894. If you have questions, comments, thoughts, want to talk with Congressman Bernie Sanders, America's independent congressman, the only independent member of the House of Representatives. Xavier, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. You're live here with our Brunch with Bernie segment.
Hi, good morning. I'm Bernie.
Good morning.
I was going to talk about the Middle East, but I wanted to get into real briefly this comment that I hear a lot, people on the left and the right saying about women and children whenever they're describing a situation. And that concerns me when I hear that, and it yanks at my heartstrings, too, when I hear about women and children being hurt in war situations. But I think that it does us a disservice, because it basically marginalizes men and turns us into war machines. And I just like to encourage people to include men as human beings, too. Okay?
Well, many of us men agree with you that men are human beings,
okay.
Xavier. But I think the point here is that at least in Fallujah and maybe other areas, people who in no way could be mistaken as combatants, people fighting, older women or kids are
right.
being killed. Okay. I think that's the point to be made there. But you're right in saying that a lot of male non-combatants are being killed. And
yeah, I just want to put them all in the same group so we start feeling like human beings and don't decide to. That brings me to my main point, is that I'm a pacifist, and I agree with Tom in the earlier part that we need to stop, we need to encourage Palestinians and Northern Irish and people around the world to use Gandhian techniques. The thing I wanted to point out, though, is that in Israel, they say that these territories were, quote, war won. And I think that what people in the United States need to realize, and powerful countries around the world that have militaries, is that as abhorrent as it is, terrorist tactics are a form of war for people who don't have the military, and we need to look at George Bush and Sharon as just as on the same par as Osama bin Laden, and that's kind of what I wanted to talk about.
Okay, thanks, Xavier. Bernie, what about the argument that is made, and I think we've got about a minute left here. I'll lay it out anyway. The argument that's made that by some folks that the Arabs declared war on Israel. Israel got the territories in a war, not unlike us in Mexico, for example, with the Southwest, and therefore it's theirs.
Well, I mean, the bottom line here, Tom, is you've got an extraordinarily hateful and horrible situation. Violence is beginning. Violence, frankly, I don't have a great deal of confidence, not only not in Sharon, but in Arafat as well. What we do need is the United States and other countries and the United Nations playing a very strong, aggressive role which works equally with both parties and tries to create an independent state for the Palestinians.
Yeah.
It's easier said than done, but I think that's the direction we've got.
Yeah, absolutely. And I believe, again, I'd have to look back at the paper here, but that basically seizing territory in war is not always agreed. That's a legitimate thing. Although it is a tough one. It is a very, very, very complicated situation. I've spent a lot of time in that region, and worked there briefly, and it's a very complicated situation. Good point, Bernie. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Our Brunch with Congressman Bernie Sanders segment. 29 minutes past the hour, and John in Montana, hang on. We'll take your call right after this break.
You.
What?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Yeah, okay. Can you tell me who Louis Armstrong was?
He was the first guy on the moon.
Mm.
You know, one small step for man.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org, because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance and Armstrong's horn. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and...
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
In what the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission calls its largest collective case ever, 511 women who worked or still work for the largest Burger King franchise in the country say they were victims of sexual harassment. The complaints come from females in 13 states where Syracuse, New York-based Carrolls Corporation owns Burger King restaurants. They all claim franchise managers did everything from make suggestive comments to fondle them in the kitchen. Carrolls Corporation calls the EEOC investigation a fishing expedition, but the government says more than two-thirds of the claims can be cross-referenced to managers who moved within the company and apparently took their harassment with them wherever they went, which makes the initial complaints more substantive than the norm.
Nike's labor record is under fire again this week. Four major union organizations in the United States and Canada sent a letter to the United Nations calling on UN Secretary General Kofi Annan to review and possibly revoke Nike's affiliation with the UN Global Compact. Adam Lee, Strategic Campaigns and International Affairs Department Coordinator for the United Steelworkers of America Union.
As a participant, it's expected to uphold certain kinds of fundamental labor rights, including freedom of association and respect for collective bargaining.
Before Nike purchased Canadian hockey apparel maker Bauer, none of Nike's 23,000 employees were unionized. Now Nike has announced plans to shut down two Bauer facilities and drastically downsize a third, resulting in hundreds of job losses.
Following pressure from civil rights groups, the federal agency in charge of handling discrimination and whistleblower complaints from the government workforce has reinstituted its commitment to protect gay and lesbian workers from harassment on the job. In January, the U.S. Office of Special Counsel revamped its discrimination and employees' rights handbook and complaint forms, removing all references to sexual orientation. That left many with the impression that anti-discrimination laws on the books since 1978 that prohibit discrimination based on sexual preference would no longer be enforced. Yesterday, the OSC's literature and forms were changed again, and all references to protection for gay and lesbian workers were restored. No reason given for the reversal. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. As the U.S. Labor Department moves to restrict overtime qualifications for 8 million workers, it is also collecting a record amount of unpaid overtime from worker-filed complaints. Just last year, the Labor Department collected $212 million worth of these claims, a 10-year high, distributing payments to some 342,000 claimants. Meanwhile, the number of overtime-related lawsuits have doubled over the last 2 years.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey George, pack your gear, we're telling you the end is near. Hey George, pack your gear, we're telling you the end is near. Your home is on the range, it's time for us to make a change. Hey George, pack your gear, we're telling you the end is near.
And welcome back, it's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 27 minutes past the hour. We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders, our Brunch with Bernie segment, the second hour of Friday afternoon. We have open lines if you'd like to call, 1-866-889-8894. Xavier in Santa Cruz is on the line. Hey, Xavier. This is John in Montana. Xavier was the last. Hey, John, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeah, Bernie, Tom. My deal is we got the Patriot Act now, and now they want the secret police. I was just wondering, what's next? Are we going to have the ovens for whoever the Patriots turn in? And
well, we've got our first concentration camp down in Cuba.
Yeah, right.
That's well, true. John, let me give you the good news on that issue, because I'm here in Pasadena just talking about it. What you should know is that while Bush wants to renew and, in fact, strengthen, make more onerous the USA Patriot Act, there are a whole lot of people, not only in this country, hundreds and hundreds of cities, 4 states in the country, who have come out in opposition to the USA Patriot Act. We have, I believe, a majority in the House of Representatives right now to repeal some of the more onerous provisions of the USA Patriot Act. I introduced the Freedom to Read bill, which would get the FBI out of our libraries and our bookstores. We have over 140 co-sponsors, not only progressives, but you have some honest conservatives, who as conservatives don't believe that the federal government should be going into your bookstore, into your library, or in fact sneaking and peeking into your house. So there is a good grassroots movement in opposition, strong grassroots movement in opposition to the USA Patriot. The librarians doing a fantastic job, the booksellers, many organizations are active. And if we keep up the pressure, I think we, at the very least, can repeal the most onerous provisions and make sure that we don't see a USA Patriot Act too.
Bernie, over the last couple of days in the congressional testimony, and if we get a break in the callers, I've got just two really short clips that I'd like to play to you that raise the question of perjury before the commission. But in any case, before this 9/11 commission, there's been almost a love fest around the Patriot Act. I mean, you had Louis Free saying, yes, it was a wonderful thing. You got George Tenet talking about it. I got the impression even Janet Reno was saying good things about it. What's the disconnect here?
Well, the disconnect is that you have already had a vote in the House of Representatives on, I think it was Section 213, which is the sneak and peek provision, which won overwhelmingly to repeal that provision.
Yeah. In other words, there's apparently the Patriot Act did some useful things that have to do with intelligence gathering, but along with it came this huge load of police state baggage.
Right, exactly. I mean, we should not confuse two things. Number one, what this 9/11 commission is telling us is that, and this is not a great secret, people have known this for years, very poor communication exists between groups like the CIA and the DIA and the FBI, et cetera, et cetera. Should we improve that? We sure should. Does that mean that you have to go forward and abrogate basic constitutional rights to fight terrorism? No, you don't.
Yeah, and
separate issues.
And interestingly, today, I believe it was the New York Times, might have been the Washington Post, had an article, the first paragraph of which was that the Bush administration appears to be planning to take the Brent Scowcroft's commission from, a couple of years ago, that they looked into the intelligence community and how to fix it. And they suggested that there be, right now, the CIA director is not only the director of the CIA, but also titularly oversees the DIA and many of these other agencies, and make basically an intelligence czar, and it almost, you know, I read that first paragraph and I thought, you know, and they said they're going to preempt the 9/11 commission, as if to, you know, they're trying to get Jamie Gorelick off it, they're trying to turn it into a majority Republican thing so that it'll come out with a, you know, I think that the Republicans are really trying to politicize this 9/11 commission. They're really trying to get the Democrat, you get at least one of the Democrats off so they have some control over it. And if they can't do that, then they're going
to
try.
Shift it to another.
Yeah, country. Shift it off to another time. Is that your sense of what's going on?
Could be. I can't comment on that.
Yeah, okay. And probably it wouldn't be appropriate for you. I'm sorry for that. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. If you'd like to call in, Robert in Tennessee, listening on the Sirius satellite system. Robert, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon. I'm just wondering about if there are plans for a permanent military base in Iraq. And I'll hang up and listen.
Okay. Thank you, Robert. Bernie?
I don't know the answer to that, Robert. What we do know is there is no date that has been announced by President Bush for the removal of U.S. troops. And the likelihood of keeping troops there for the indefinite period, unless we can change policies and internationalize the situation, seems to me to be a possibility.
Yeah, and in fact, we're building what look like permanent installations now, aren't we, in 15, 16 different locations?
Right.
Yeah. It's very strange. Let me just play two quick clips for you here, Bernie, and I'd like to get your take on this. This was George Tenet talking day before yesterday about how often this, you know, he's running around with his hair on fire. 9/11's going to happen. George Bush gets this August 6 memo that's titled "Bin Laden Determined to Strike Inside the United States," and here's this testimony, the questioning of George Tenet. First of all,
briefing the president from August 6 on.
I didn't see the president. I was not in briefings with him during this time. He was on vacation.
You didn't see
the
president between August 6, 2001, and September 10th?
No, before, saw him after Labor Day, to be sure.
So you saw him September 4th at the principal's meeting?
He was not at the principal's meeting.
And then Romer continues.
Okay, I'm just confused. You see him on August 6th with the PDB?
No, I do not, sir. I'm not there.
Okay, you're not there. When do you see him in August?
I don't believe I do.
You don't see the President of the United States once in the month of August?
He's in Texas.
Yeah, he's in Texas on vacation. And then we've got Condi Rice saying something quite different. If it's okay with you, Bernie, if
sure.
I play this for you. Okay.
At the beginning of the administration, President Bush revived the practice of meeting with the Director of Central Intelligence almost every day in the Oval Office, meetings which I attended along with the Vice President and the Chief of Staff. At these meetings, the President received up-to-date intelligence and asked questions of his most senior intelligence officials. From January 20th through September 10th, the President received at these daily meetings more than 40 briefing items on Al-Qaeda, and 13 of those were in response to questions he or his top advisors posed.
Now, she says, you know, from January something to September 10th, he was getting daily briefings. George Tenet says, I didn't see him for a month because he's in Texas and he's on vacation.
Maybe.
What's going on here?
Maybe what that position will be, he didn't meet with Tenet, but he met with other people. I'm sure that in the course of a day, the president will meet with, you know, key intelligence people. But the issue here, obviously, and I think millions of Americans are concerned about, if you receive a memo telling you that Osama bin Laden is intent upon attacking the United States, you might want to take this thing fairly seriously and move aggressively to put together all of the intelligence and defend ourselves as best you can. And apparently that was not the case.
No, in fact, he went golfing after he read the memo. Here's a news story that came across from Yahoo. And by the way, if you want to move the topic in another direction, just let me know. But I thought this is something I got to share with Bernie. Canadian internet pharmacies are turning to Europe for supplies as pharmaceutical companies are choking off prescription drugs sent north of the border to stop the flow of cheap medicines back to the United States. Pfizer has cut off two Canadian wholesalers in February, and now CanadaMeds.com and UniversalDrugstore.com, these two Canadian pharmacies on the web, are now going to start importing drugs from England, Ireland, and New Zealand.
Good.
It's
well, here's what the
what is going on.
I've been a leader in Congress on that issue. We're trying to deal with the reality that Americans are forced to pay by far the highest prices in the world. As you know, a number of years ago, I took a group of Vermonters across the Canadian border. They purchased some drugs for one-tenth the price.
This was the beginning of the whole thing. This was when you did that. That was the beginning of the whole thing.
That was the beginning. A lot of other members of Congress. Where we are right now, and again, sometimes I know that listeners get pessimistic. They feel hopeless and so forth. Let me give you some good news. And the good news is that while the Bush administration very clearly is in bed with the pharmaceutical industry, and the Bush FDA is doing everything that they can to keep prices sky high in the United States, you know what we're seeing? We're seeing mayors all over this country starting to purchase medicine from Canada for their workers and for people in their communities. We're seeing Republican governors in Minnesota, in New Hampshire, not to mention Democratic governors, doing the same thing. And we have now an estimated 2 million Americans who are saying, hey, I am not going to pay prices 2 times, 5 times, 10 times higher than our friends around the rest of the world. So there is a mass movement. We have the votes, which we passed in the House. Very big vote. We now have the votes in the Senate to pass it. And watch closely in the next couple of months for legislation to pass the Senate, which says that pharmacists, prescription drug distributors, and individuals should be able to purchase safe FDA medicine any place in the world where they can. The result of that will be to lower prescription drug costs in America by between 25% to 50%.
Amazing. Now, here's something that I haven't seen in the press at all, Bernie, and I'm wondering if there's going to be any congressional investigation into. You know, the situation with Stephen Foster, the guy who was told he would be fired by his boss. His boss was a guy named Thomas Scully.
Right.
Scully, before he came to work for the for Medicaid, as the head Medicare administrator, had been a $600,000 a year employee of a company that he was the head of the association. I forget the name of it, the National Association of For-Profit Hospitals. He was the head of this group. According to administration officials, he aggressively lobbied to get the job as the head of Medicare. George Bush personally intervened to help him get the job. He goes from a two-thirds of a million dollar a year job down to being a lowly civil servant in the system.
Well, don't feel too bad for him. He wasn't exactly on welfare. He did make a living.
Yeah, right. And during that time, then he writes a Medicare bill that says that governments can't negotiate prices of drugs. And then the day after, the week after that bill is passed, he retires from his job at Medicare and goes back to work as an attorney and lobbyist for pharma, for the big association, and for the hospitals. I mean,
aren't we shocked?
Well, I frankly am. What shocks me is that nobody is pointing this out. Why isn't anybody talking about this?
Again, what you have to appreciate, the Republicans control the Congress. They are all of the chairpersons. In fact, so it is very not so easy as you might think to snap one's finger and get an investigation. But what is being investigated is, and Tommy Thompson is presumably looking at this, is the fact that Scully threatened to fire Foster if he told members of Congress who wanted this information as to how much this absurd and disastrous prescription drug Medicare bill would be. As you know, a lot of conservatives were very nervous about spending large sums of money on this bill. What the Bush administration said, don't worry, it's only going to cost $395 billion over a 10-year period, turns out that 2 months later, we learned that it's going to cost over $500 billion. And what Foster said is that's what he wanted to tell members of Congress during the debate. But Scully said, hey, you're going to get fired if you do that.
Yeah.
Let me add something to it. The guy, if you think that situation is bad, let me take you to another plane. The fellow who was the chairman of the House Commerce Committee, a fellow named Billy Towson from Louisiana, is going to be retiring from Congress. He was offered, according to the Washington Post, maybe 6 weeks ago, a $2 million a year job representing pharma, which is the trade group for the pharmaceutical industry. So if anybody has any doubts that that absurd bill was written by the pharmaceutical industry and for that industry, I hope that they will understand that what the situation is.
Yeah, well, I did a pretty exhaustive Google search on Scully, and the only publication that reported that he was the president of the for-profit hospital association, basically, you know, Bill Frist's bunch, prior to his lobbying for this civil service job, was one of the medical publications. And the New York Times, the Washington Post, whenever they refer to him, they refer to him as somebody who had been in the private sector and who has now returned to the private sector, and they never give
Frist,
the details.
I mean, you also understand that Frist's family, very, very wealthy family, if my memory is correct, they own the largest for-profit hospital chain in the country, if my memory is correct.
Yeah, they've sold much of it, but yes, they built their fortune buying up non-profit hospitals, right, turning them for-profit, squeezing the blood out of us. Well, anyhow, let's move along to some calls here. We can work each other up into a lather on this stuff. Patrick in New Jersey's on the line. Hey, Patrick, thanks for waiting. What's up?
Yeah, hello, Tom, and hello, Bernie. Pleasure and honor to speak with you both again. There's so many things I could discuss with you, Bernie, but let me go back to the war with Iraq. I appreciate and understand that the Republicans are running and controlling everything in Congress, but I think Democrats, now I know you are, but perhaps the fault lies...
I'm an independent, not a Democrat.
Bernie's not a Democrat.
Bernie, I'm sorry, independent, but others who are opposed to the war, and there's, you know, a lot of them that are, but they're not doing anything. So my thing is this. What can be done to get a lot of these Democrats, like Kerry especially, to be more outspoken and forceful against this war? If I hear Kerry say one more time that he wants to send more troops or that he wants to continue the war or he has no plan to get out of the war, if I hear that one more time, I'm voting for Ralph Nader. Because I'm not going to take this crap anymore.
Okay. Patrick, thank you.
Well, Patrick, you've raised two or three different issues.
And we've got about a minute.
Okay. I mean, number one. And I think I speak for Tom on this issue as well. What we as a nation have got to do is change the political culture. Every person who is listening to this show has the potential to register a whole lot of people, has the potential and the opportunity to have meetings with their members of Congress, has the opportunity to push resolutions on their city council. We've got to mobilize people and organize people. The stronger the grassroots effort, the more pressure goes on Kerry, and everybody else and members of Congress as well. In fact, at the beginning of the discussion about the war in Iraq, only a handful of us opposed that effort. Because of grassroots support, it went to well over 100.
Yeah.
So that's, I think, the direction that we've got to be moving.
So it's get active, but please don't vote for Ralph Nader, Patrick.
Well, we'll talk about that after the I agree with you. Let's talk about that after the next break.
Okay, we got this break, and we got Janet in Fort Lauderdale on the line, too. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, Brunch with Bernie Sanders, Congressman Bernie Sanders, America's independent congressman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights.
Congress. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Floating houses and water buffalo were the mainstays of life for people who once inhabited the vast marshes of Iraq. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. The southeastern corner of Iraq was once a huge wetland, and some people believe it was the biblical Garden of Eden. For more than 5,000 years, a people known as the Marsh Arabs lived there. But today, the wetlands and the unique culture of the Marsh Arabs are in danger, and scientists are working hard to restore them. Michelle Stevens works on an international project called Eden Again. She says more than 90% of Iraq's original wetlands have dried out, and most of the people who live there have moved away. That's due in part to dams upstream in the Tigris and Euphrates rivers. It's also due to attacks by Saddam Hussein. In the early 1990s, Hussein intentionally drained the marshes, poisoned water, and burned villages. Stevens says the Marsh Arabs once had a beautiful way of life.
They lived on these floating islands of reeds, and their homes were built of reeds. People would go visit each other house to house on their canoes. So everything was waterway. Everything was moving between water.
The reeds in the marshes grew as tall as 20 feet, and the people there wove their homes out of the tallest ones. Stephen says the Marsh Arabs also raised water buffalo. The animals slept on the floating mats where the people lived, and their owners sang to them at night. Stephen says the former inhabitants of Iraq's vast wetland had a knowledge of ecology and practical living that's a true cultural treasure. She says the Eden Again Project is trying to find some of the people who moved away to interview them and learn about their lives. The project also wants to help the people who still live in the former wetland restore the marshes and their way of life. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I pledge allegiance to the
corporations
of the United
States of America
and to
plutocracy
for which it stands.
Oh, my God. That's got to be a good one, and I'd like to listen to more of it, but we just don't have time right now. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. We're on with Congressman Bernie Sanders. We have Janet in Fort Lauderdale. Hey, Janet, can you make it kind of quick here?
Yes, I can. How are you today?
Thank you. Good.
Okay. I'm calling in regards to the discussion about the pharmaceuticals and going to Canada.
Yep.
Now, as a wife of a pharmacist who's been in business over 30 years, the answer is not to go to Canada. The answer is to make sure that the pharmaceutical companies sell to those of us in America our pharmacies and everything else at the same price. Unless the Congress wants to support my family and send my children to college, I need to earn a living.
Well, Janet, stay on the phone. Because what you should understand is this is exactly what we are trying to do. If you heard me before,
no,
what
you
I said
you were going to get it okay that people could go to Canada.
Not only
people.
No, 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 no. Janet, what I said, pharmacists. The reason that some medicines are five times higher in the United States today than in Canada is that your husband is paying five times more from Pfizer and the other drug companies.
Oh, definitely.
That's the point. And the point is, once we pass this legislation, it will force the drug companies to sell the product to your store and to pharmacies all over America at the same prices they do around the world. What we want is world prices here in the United States, not the highest prices in the world.
Exactly.
So the goal is not to have everybody go to Canada. The goal is to force the companies to lower their prices. This legislation is an important way to do that. Okay?
Exactly. And the reason another reason is a lot of people who are going to these places now that have set up shop, especially here in Florida, they walk in with a prescription and it's a storefront and they send it. And guess what? When they have a reaction, they call my husband, expect my husband to give them an answer. No one's giving him a nickel.
Okay, I agree with you. We want people.
His time, his education is worth a lot of. You know, he spent thousands.
Johnny, you don't have to argue with me because I agree with you. We want people to go to pharmacists. Pharmacists know their patients. They know the kinds of different medicines that they're prescribing and so forth and so on. But be clear. The goal of what we are trying to do, and this is the best way that we could do it at this moment, is to force the drug companies to sell their product in this country at world prices.
And the going to Canada was part of a theater to bring that about.
Right.
It really wasn't the goal.
And it's
Jim,
working. Making progress.
Well, please let us know if there's anything that we can do to help.
Okay.
Okay. Janet, thanks for the call. Bernie, thank you very much for being with us today.
Okay, Tom.
That was
see you next week.
Such a pleasure to have you all on. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program? Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
That was good.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Michael Stinson in Hawaii. In politics, it is known as the burn rate, the speed at which a campaign spends the money it has raised. One AdWatch team estimates that the Bush campaign has already spent nearly half of its pre-convention advertising budget. With a poll showing George W. Bush even or slightly behind John Kerry, it means that the Bush campaign's huge financial advantage has now all but disappeared. Since early March, the Bush campaign has been advertising at a rate of $9 million a week, but the campaign is now cutting that in half after seeing Bush's election message, pushed aside by the attention around 9/11 and by the daily attacks on the American troops in Iraq. The bad news is overwhelming them right now, and I think they've got a predicament, said former Dean campaign manager and political analyst Joe Trippi. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld admitted Thursday that he had been surprised by the heavy toll in blood inflicted on American forces in recent days. The Pentagon chief asked at a news conference whether he had made any mistakes concerning the war in Iraq, came close to a rare admission of miscalculation, conceding that he failed to foresee the level of resistance facing U.S. forces in Iraq a full year after the fall of Baghdad. If someone had said, "Would you, a year ago, have expected you would be where you are at the present time?" one would not have described where we are, Rumsfeld said. I certainly would not have estimated that we would have had the number of individuals lost that we have in the last week. Spouses of soldiers from units in the 1st Armored Division already suspected that they were going to be told that their husbands or wives were going to be kept in Iraq for up to 4 more months, even though their supposedly one-year tours were finished. Some people were angry and didn't shed a tear, said Lisa Box, a family readiness group leader with Baumholder's 22nd Base Support Battalion in Germany. Others just totally fell apart. Spouses in both Baumholder and Wiesbaden, home to 1st AD units, said they were told by rear detachment commanders not to talk to the press. The wives said they feared that allowing their names to be used would cause them to lose their jobs on base or cause repercussions for their husbands downrange. More after this.
We got your liver.
How can they sit there and claim that they didn't know it was going to happen, but they've taken great care of us? Joe Sixpack ain't going to buy this.
I mean, Bush is running on the fact that he's kept us safe. On the other hand, everybody that speaks for the guy is saying another attack is going to happen, and we're never going to be able to stop it. It's going to happen.
These people are, quite frankly, flatly insane.
Insane.
TBTM Radio, on the web at TakeBackTheMedia.com.
A patrolman from Wisconsin left his opponents in a cloud of powdered sugar by downing 9.5 donuts in 3 minutes to win a donut-eating contest for police officers in suburban Chicago. Terry O'Brien of the police department in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, said he was destined to win Wednesday's contest because law enforcement runs in his family. The Dunkin' Donuts World Cup Donut-Eating Championship attracted 40 contestants from the USA and Canada. Master of Ceremonies Ed Nowicki said, "I thought they'd do 7 donuts, maybe they'd do 8. I couldn't believe 10. For Minuteman News Service, this is Michael Stinson in Hawaii.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Time for another report from the wide, 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 wild world of sports. Today's feature is about the amazing athletic contortions of New York politicians straining to please Mr. Robert Woody Johnson. Woody, as he's known to his sporting pals, is a billionaire heir to the Johnson & Johnson fortune and the present owner of the New York Jets pro football team. He's also a major league donor to such Republican politicos as New York Governor George Pataki and New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Now, Woody has a wish. He wants a brand new 75,000-seat football stadium on Manhattan's west side. A stadium with a retractable roof and a wraparound beehive of luxury skyboxes that he could lease to corporate high rollers. Of course, Woody is rich enough to build such a sports palace himself, but gosh, what's the use of being rich if you can't get your political pals to pony up some tax dollars for your private project? Thus, we recently witnessed the sports spectacle of Governor Pataki and Mayor Bloomberg leading an in-sweep for old Woody, promising $600 million in state and city money to help Woody score his stadium. The mayor even got into a cheerleader mode when the plan was announced, saying, "If you don't have a smile on your face today, you're never going to have one." I hate for reality to rain on Mike's pom-poms, but most New Yorkers are definitely not smiling. That's because Mike is the same mayor who says the city has no money for pay raises for police, who cannot find the funds to provide working toilets or even toilet paper for all of the public school children, who wants to cut $3 million from the city's infant mortality program and $15 million from foster care services, and who has already cut $21 million from public libraries, closing some branches 3 days a week. This is Jim Hightower saying, it's all a matter of political priorities. So who wants libraries when Woody wants a new stadium?
When you're the voice of reason, very few things get you excited. So you wouldn't expect something like a good price on a great copier to be one of them. But when the subject is a Xerox digital copier that delivers 35 quality pages a minute for a surprisingly low lease price of $134 a month and is so advanced it can be upgraded to scan, fax, and even email, well, that's enough to even make the voice of reason pick up the phone.
Call 1-800-ASK-XEROX for business lease details. Additional per copy charge.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works. Fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works. Not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello. Relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec? Nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night.
Uncovers corporate lies, exposed political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 7 minutes past the hour, the Tom Hartman radio program. The place on the radio where our talking points come from, Madison and Jefferson. And occasionally Washington and Franklin and Mason and Lee and set of right-wing think tanks in the RNC. In a broadside fired at the conduct of the war in Iraq, did you see this? A senior army strategist, this guy, his name is Antulo J. Echeverria. He's the Army Lieutenant Colonel of the U.S. Army War College. He's the director of National Security Studies at the War College's Strategic Studies Institute. This is not a left-wing think tank. This is the War College. This guy has got a PhD. He's a graduate of West Point, PhD in history. And he writes, he just published a paper, the War College, the United States Army War College, just published a paper that he wrote saying that the Bush administration was seeking to win quickly and on the cheap, end quote, while ignoring the more critical strategic aims of creating a stable democratic nation. He says that the administration, I'm quoting now, either misunderstood or worse, wished away, end quote, the difficulties of transforming that victory into the larger political goal. He points out that it was the Pentagon's civilian leadership, centered in the Office of Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, who focused on, quote, achieving rapid military victories with a force equipped only to win battles but not wars, end quote. Now, a lot of people in the military are still fried about Army Chief of Staff General Eric Shinseki being bounced out last spring because and criticized by Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz for saying that it's going to take, you know, that the occupation, how dare he? I mean, he's only a professional, you know, he's a general, right? That the occupation was going to take more soldiers than the actual battle for Baghdad. Well, he'd been in the military for 20, 30 years. He'd seen it. He'd been there. Wolfowitz, no, he was a draft dodger, sorry. Anyhow, Echeverria echoes a North Vietnamese officer who made a comment to Harry Summers Jr., who was an Army, also the Army War College. He was what was called a combat officer and strategist. That's probably not a title, but anyway, Harry Summers Jr., excuse me, had met with this North Vietnamese officer after the Vietnam War. This is part of the lore. This is the stuff they teach at the War College. And Harry Summers said to this North Vietnamese Army officer, "You never defeated us on the battlefield. There wasn't a single battle that the North Vietnamese won." And, you know, during the Vietnam War, which is, as far as I know, true. And the North Vietnamese officer replied, "Yes, but that's irrelevant." And this, the cautionary note, George Bush says, "Well, no, it's not Iraq. I beg to differ. Iraq is not Vietnam. As I said the other day, I think it's probably more like Lebanon. But in any case, I want to just retrack a little bit of this Israeli-Palestinian stuff. I want to share with you some thoughts from David Sirota over at the Center for American Progress. And my take on it, just revisit it. And also, by the way, it's Friday afternoon. It's the last hour of the show. If there's anything you want to talk about, feel free. Just, you know, give us a call. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. But anyhow, on Wednesday, this thing was an absolutely huge shift. The United States, our traditional role in the peace process between Israel and the Palestinians, that actually has looked at times like, you know, hey, we can get this thing together, has been to be what's called an honest broker in diplomatic terms, which means that you're not, on the one hand, you're not taking either side, and on the other hand, you are advocating for each side. And if you don't have somebody in the middle who both sides consider a friend, you can't have a negotiation that works. It's just, this is like very simple, very straightforward stuff. And never before in the history of the negotiations between the Palestinians and the Israelis that the Americans have participated in, never before has a president taken the leader of one side or the other and come out and said, you know, this guy just made a bunch of proposals, and I haven't even bothered to talk to the other side, but I agree with him. It's never happened before. Even the Israelis were astonished. They didn't expect this. They're absolutely astonished. 1-866-889-8894. Ken in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Ken, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Tom, you there?
I am, and you are too.
Okay, I'm just curious. I haven't heard. I've listened to you. I listen to Al Franken, you know, as much as I can. And I haven't heard anybody point out that maybe Bush's vacation is easier thing to sell than the fact that they knew that Washington was going to get attacked, and they just kept him in Texas.
Well, this is something, you know, Maureen Dowd raises obliquely, not the last four words of your sentence, but, you know, she points out that right after George Tenet said that he never in August saw George Bush, his office released a correction saying that actually twice during August he flew down to Texas to meet George uh-huh. Bush, and it's like, why would he have such a bad memory about you fly right from Washington to Crawford, Texas in the middle of August, a week before 9/11. You'd think you'd remember it. And could it be that Bush was getting updated about what's going on and knew that something terrible was going to happen on the East Coast, and it was going to happen any day now, and that's why he took the longest vacation in the history of the presidency. And then when he was finished with that, still refused to go back to Washington, went to Florida where his brother put the entire state on high alert, the National Guard in Florida on high alert, and, you know, saying, well, this is what we do when the president comes to town. It was the first time it had ever been done when the president came to town, and statewide. And I'm willing to go along with that. I don't think that that's far out thinking, you know, at all.
Yeah, it just seems like it's easier for them to sell the vacation than the pre knowledge of something bad going to happen.
Oh yeah, because pre knowledge would imply it may be innocently or whatever, you know, or just because it was so screwed up, like the 9/11 Commission seems to be portraying it as. I think, you know, perhaps we're spending
dumb luck,
more.
Dumb luck, you mean?
Yeah, well, the whole intelligence thing, you know, the thing now is let's blame it on systemic failures, so nobody has to take the fall. It's nobody's fault, it's the system's fault. Well, they're trying to blame it. The Republicans, of course, are trying to blame it on Jamie Gorelick. You know, let's pick a Democrat, and by and large, I mean, all the right-wing talk show hosts are trying to blame it on Bill Clinton, because, of course, you blame everything on Bill Clinton.
Well, but, thanks, I'm going to hang up.
Yeah, okay, I appreciate the call. But, I think it's a possibility. I really do, and so anyhow, here we go. The peace process has been in the Middle East has been substantially harmed by this, and this I think is the reason why this is important. Goes beyond Israel and the Palestinians, because we have now put this huge chunk of our military. I mean, we are just badly overextended. This huge chunk of our military into Iraq, and we're saying, hey, you know, here we are, guys. We're in the middle of the Middle East. We're surrounded by Arabs, and then we antagonize them. It's like, why? You want another conspiracy theory? I mean, here's one that you could build something on this. I think fairly easily, and I would hate to think that that's, you know, that this is. Well, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution ran an article. They said the leap from Palestinian suffering to Iraqi suffering is not far-fetched for Arab observers who see a clear political strategy by the United States in Iraq. In other words, endorsing Sharon's plan without involving the Palestinians, without asking them what they think, without even telling them that you're going to do it in advance, it's upsetting to the Palestinians, as we've figured out. But it also is convincing the Iraqis, the paranoids among the Iraqis, which is like 95% of the population now. It's probably accurately more like 70 or 80%. I mean, you look at the Pew studies, the Iraqis who are convinced that we're up to no good there. We're there for the oil. We're there to steal the wealth of the country. We're there to privatize the businesses. We're not there to bring democracy. We're there to bring corporatism. And of course they always toss in the great Jewish conspiracy theory to that thing. And George Bush just plays right into it. Just plays right into it. And even if he is that dumb, I can't believe his advisors are. I mean, you know, so why? Why would we do this? What possible advantage is there to the United States in this? Somebody tell me, please. I don't get it. We are alienating our allies. The Guardian of London, the Guardian newspaper, reports that in his visit to the White House today, British Prime Minister Tony Blair, I'm quoting from The Guardian, will make clear to President Bush in private that Blair cannot sign up to Ariel Sharon's unilateral plan, end quote. Foreign Secretary Jack Straw has said, he's the equivalent of Colin Powell, quote, President Bush has made his own judgments, we make our own. The European Union has criticized this thing. The United Nations Secretary General Kofi Annan, who said through a spokesman that a peace plan, quote, should be determined in negotiations between the parties based on relevant Security Council resolutions, end quote. I mean, the entire planet is saying, Bush, what are you doing? Anyhow, 1-866-889-8894, Jerry in North Carolina. Hey, Jerry, we've got about a minute here. If it's a little longer, then I can hold you over the break, and then we got David in Santa Fe on the line.
Oh,
what's up?
I'll be very brief.
Okay.
You know, I know this is going to sound very, very partisan, but other than three times pardoning the Thanksgiving turkey, I can't really think of anything that this administration has done that's important that they've done well.
Well, this is a question. I had Tom Tancredo on, the congressman from, I believe, Colorado, and I said, would you please name for me one piece of legislation that the Republicans have put forward and George Bush has signed into law that benefited people instead of corporations? And he was unable to do so.
I remember that show. I was listening.
Yeah, I agree with you. And you know, yeah, he pardoned the turkey, and there are even questions about that. You know, what happened to that turkey? Jerry, I appreciate the call. And yeah, it does sound partisan, and I think that's okay. You know, occasionally we live in partisan times. I mean, frankly, it's might as well just be upfront about where we stand on things, eh? 20 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly, and they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America, Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
On December 10th, the Bush administration joined 45 states, warning Americans not to eat fish with high mercury levels that can cause birth defects and learning disabilities. But days later, the administration said it wanted to give power plants permission to shower more mercury onto our lakes and streams for 10 years longer than the law allows. Sound fishy? Mr. President, there's a better way to strengthen the State of the Union. Protect us, not the polluters who contributed to your campaign. Enforce the Clean Air Act.
For years, economists have defined the economic health of a country by its gross domestic product. Trouble is, every time a forest falls, the GDP goes up. With every oil spill, the GDP goes up. Every time a cancer patient is diagnosed, the GDP goes up. Is this how we measure economic progress? Economists must learn to subtract.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the TuneTracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the TuneTracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the pro version with traffic interface, and only $149.95 for the original TuneTracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Cool, cool, glad you made it. Welcome to the world of entertainment. It's unlike any other game around. Cool, cool, glad you made it. Welcome to the world of entertainment. I hope you're ready, cause they're gonna knock you down, down, down.
And welcome back. Revitalizing the world. Revitalizing democracy and transforming the world thereby. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. By the way, my new book, We the People, this is an illustrated book. I've never had a comic book out that I wrote. You know, it's such a hoot. I didn't do the illustrations. They had an illustrator do this. But it is actually, I think, the best summary available right now of my writings and thinkings about the history of the United States. It's full of quotes from Jefferson and Madison, the founding of the country, and the state of corporatism and the state of fascism in the United States. It's called We the People, A Call to Take Back America. And forgive the shameless pitch, but I am so happy that the publisher did such a great job with this book. It's worth. And BuzzFlash.com is selling on their website, which also supports the website. If you go to BuzzFlash.com, and of course it's in bookstores and Amazon and everything. 1-866-889-8894. David in Santa Fe, New Mexico, is on the line. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom.
What's up?
Well, first comment about Bush and Israel and Palestine.
too bad that he did that, because we know that he can't admit that he made a mistake or change his mind once he's done something.
You know, we were just talking about this in the chat room during the break. If you've never dropped into our chat room, I mean, there's some really brilliant people in there. And somebody had put a URL to a new book that's coming out wherein a Bush family member relates that George Bush told him that he believes he's fighting a holy war. And somebody made the comment that Bush thinks he's infallible. And there are, I think, some fairly reasonable sources that imply that George Bush believes that he is completely divinely inspired in everything he does and therefore infallible. And that, to me, is a very, very dangerous combination.
Well, he said it would be a huge project for him to figure out what mistakes he might have made in his conference the other night. So,
well,
I think you're right on.
Yeah, even scarier than that, in that press conference, he was talking toward the end. He was talking about, we have this historic opportunity to remake the world. Like, gee, it's our responsibility to remake the world. And that you know, freedom doesn't come from nations or from people. It comes from God. And it was just this great pitch that, you know, to his base. But freedom does actually come about as a consequence of people saying, we don't want to be ruled by kings or theocratic popes and priests or by the rich. We want to rule ourselves. It's called democracy.
How true.
But you know that. Anyhow, what'd you call about?
The reason for my call was I wondered if you'd heard Don Rumsfeld's comment this morning that they played on the news here in Santa Fe.
Yeah, I will quote it. He said, if you had said to me a year ago, describe the situation you'll be in today 1 year later, I don't know many people who would have described it. I would not have described it the way it happens to be today. I certainly would have not have estimated that we would have had the number of individuals lost that we had lost in the last week. End quote. That's, I'm assuming, the quote you're talking about?
Yeah, it is. So that's code for I screwed up big time, and I'm really surprised they got him to say it.
Yeah, well, you know, there's apparently either there's a turf war going on inside and he's taking shots at somebody, or, you know, Don Rumsfeld is going through the same thing that George McNamara did after the Vietnam War, you know, a crisis of conscience, which is hard to imagine. I can't imagine Cheney or Bush, frankly, doing that, but maybe Rumsfeld. Who knows?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, another little kind of tangential Rumsfeld story. His daughter lives here in Santa Fe. And a guy of Middle Eastern descent, but an American citizen born here of Middle Eastern parents, was doing some
got 10 seconds,
tagging.
David. Yeah.
You know, with a spray can.
Uh-huh.
And it just happened to be near her house.
Right.
Oh, my God. You wouldn't believe what that guy's going through with the FBI and the CIA.
You know, I'm not opposed to that, David. I think that people who go into public service like Don Rumsfeld has done, you know, whether you agree with them or disagree with what they do, they're putting themselves on the line. I mean, you get out in the public eye. I get hate mail. We've had our car has been shot at. You know, these kinds of things happen. So I have no problem with his family being protected. I really don't. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 29 minutes past the hour.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
In what the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission calls its largest collective case ever, 511 women who worked or still work for the largest Burger King franchise in the country say they were victims of sexual harassment. The complaints come from females in 13 states where Syracuse, New York-based Carroll's Corporation owns Burger King restaurants. They all claim franchise managers did everything from make suggestive comments to fondle them in the kitchen. Carroll's Corporation calls the EEOC investigation a fishing expedition, but the government says more than two-thirds of the claims can be cross-referenced to managers who moved within the company and apparently took their harassment with them wherever they went, which makes the initial complaints more substantive than the norm.
Nike's labor record is under fire again this week.
Four major union organizations in the United States and Canada sent a letter to the United Nations calling on UN Secretary General Kofi Annan to review and possibly revoke Nike's affiliation with the UN Global Compact. Adam Lee, Strategic Campaigns and International Affairs Department Coordinator for the United Steelworkers of America Union.
As a participant, it's expected to uphold certain kinds of fundamental labor rights, including freedom of association and respect for collective bargaining.
Before Nike purchased Canadian hockey apparel maker Bauer, none of Nike's 23,000 employees were unionized. Now Nike has announced plans to shut down two Bauer facilities and drastically downsize a third, resulting in hundreds of job losses.
Following pressure from civil rights groups, the federal agency in charge of handling discrimination and whistleblower complaints from the government workforce has reinstituted its commitment to protect gay and lesbian workers from harassment on the job. In January, the U.S. Office of Special Counsel revamped its discrimination and employees' rights handbook and complaint forms, removing all references to sexual orientation. That left many with the impression that anti-discrimination laws on the books since 1978 that prohibit discrimination based on sexual preference would no longer be enforced. Yesterday, the OSC's literature and forms were changed again, and all references to protection for gay and lesbian workers were restored. No reason given for the reversal. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. As the U.S. Labor Department moves to restrict overtime qualifications for 8 million workers, it is also collecting a record amount of unpaid overtime from worker-filed complaints. Just last year, the Labor Department collected $212 million worth of these claims, a 10-year high, distributing payments to some 342,000 claimants. Meanwhile, the number of overtime-related lawsuits have doubled over the last 2 years.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. Speaking from behind the good old working class stainless steel microphone high up in the Green Mountains of the People's Republic of Vermont, it's Tom Hartman with you. 26 minutes before the hour. Discussing the truths that some of the multinational corporations would prefer you really didn't know all about. Some of the Republicans maybe would prefer you didn't know all about. But boy, is it fun. Isn't it fun? Isn't it interesting? 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. It's Friday afternoon. Anything you want to talk about, give me a shout. I want to just, I guess we've wrapped up this Israeli thing, unless that's what Matt in New York wants to talk about. Hey, Matt, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up, Matt?
This is going back a little ways. I think earlier you made a comment about how you don't think it's unreasonable that a woman said something to the effect of Bush might have been getting information from George Tenet in Texas pertaining to 9/11 before it even happened, and that he might not have done anything about it. Is that the basic gist of what you might have said about 20 minutes ago?
Broadly, yeah. It wasn't that he didn't do anything about it. I am guessing, and I could be wrong. I mean, I'd like to cut these guys a little slack just because I want to believe, and you know, call me a Pollyanna, but I want to believe that there's some humanity in them, that they knew something was going to go down. They knew it was going to be big. They knew it was probably going to happen in New York and Washington, and they hadn't been able to figure out what it was. So they couldn't stop it. So if you can't stop it, then plan B is figure out how to make the best of it, which is stay out of town, get the Patriot Act ready, start talking about war, and, you know, if it still hasn't happened by the end of August, go to Florida.
Well, I'm as anti-Bush as anybody, don't get me wrong, and I don't mean this as a personal attack on you, but isn't it kind of irresponsible to lay that at the feet of George Bush, saying that he had serious indications of what was going down and didn't move, you know, as Condoleezza Rice has said, heaven and earth to stop it? I mean, I don't like Bush, but he's a human being. He would have done something to stop it if he really had that strong an indication, don't you think?
Well, that's what I was saying. I think that at that point they knew something was going to happen, but they didn't have the information necessary to stop it. Now, this is, you know, there are folks who believe that not only did they know what was going on, but that they even instigated it. I don't go there. But no, I don't think it's irresponsible. In fact, after Pearl Harbor, I mean, you know, there's a good 10-15 years where, well, to this day there are people who think that FDR you know, knew that Pearl Harbor was going to happen, and in fact, you know, intentionally provoked it and didn't warn the fleet and all this kind of stuff. No, I don't think it's irresponsible. I think it's part of public discourse.
Yeah, but you really don't think he would have warned us or done something? You just think that he would have made the necessary aftermath of preparations and just left it at that?
Frankly, I don't think, number one, that he expected, and again, this is just my personal speculation, I don't think he expected that it was going to be as big as it was. I figured, but I could be wrong. I don't think that they thought that the World Trade Towers would literally fall down and all those thousands of people would die. I don't think that they imagined anything that big. I think they imagined something that would be, you know, big, but not anything like that, number one. And geez, I forgot number two. What was your second point there?
That you just kind of ignored it and made the necessary aftermath preparation.
Oh, I know what. Yeah, I know what my other point was. And I think that on some level they rationalized not telling us about it, and by saying, hey, we don't want to bring down the economy of the country. We don't want to put the airlines out of business. We have had threats before. There have been numerous threats. These threats go all the way back to 1993. And if we warn people not to get on airplanes, or if we warn people not to go into skyscrapers in New York, it'll put the country into paralysis. And then if something doesn't happen, we'll look like complete idiots. I mean, what would you do if you were the president?
I don't know. I have a lot of reasons not to like Bush, but I just don't think that anybody can really take the full brunt of something like September 11th. I mean, I agree that there wasn't the necessary apparatus in place to deal with this type of occurrence. So, I mean,
you know, after the Bay of Pigs, Jack Kennedy went on television and said to the American people, and I'm paraphrasing, I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but I was just reading it 3 days ago. He said, this was a terrible mistake. This was a tragedy. It happened on my watch, and I take full responsibility. Now, the Bay of Pigs was an October surprise that Richard Nixon planned for October of 1960 that he thought was going to help him win the presidency in the elections 4 weeks later in November of 1960. And he planned that thing for almost a year. He was the director of the Cuba desk as vice president. You know, Eisenhower put him in charge of the whole Cuba thing. And there was a tropical storm or something down there, and he couldn't pull it off. Richard Nixon put it together. He down at what they called the University of Campus, Florida, which was a really big CIA operation down near Miami. He brought in the 10,000 Cubans. He created this thing. He got these guys all cranked up. He supplied them with weapons. And then Kennedy inherited it, and for the first year of his presidency, didn't even know it was there. You know, E. Howard Hunt and these guys in the CIA were basically sitting on it thinking that they could unwind it and make it go away. And the Cubans were saying, no, we're not going to go away. And so Kennedy could have easily said, I didn't know what was going on. It wasn't my fault. I mean, it was literally a decade later when all this information that I'm sharing with you right now came out, and it's irrefutable. And Kennedy could have blamed the whole thing on Nixon, and instead he came before the American people and he said, this was my fault. Now, why doesn't George Bush have that kind of courage? I'll tell you why. Because he had a poll done that said, and this was in the New York Times yesterday, he had a poll done that said that he should not take responsibility because it would make him look weak. That was something that the Democrats would do, but not a Republican.
Well, again, I disagree with everything Bush has done in the aftermath of September 11th. My point is just that I personally don't think it's fair to lay the actual event of September 11th at the feet of the Bush administration or any administration. It could have happened on anybody's watch to anybody. It's just one of those things,
okay,
you know,
well,
that they say you have to be right 100% of the time. They only have to be right one time, and I think that's what this was.
Yeah, you make a good point, Matt. I'm not saying that George Bush is responsible for 9/11. Osama bin Laden was apparently responsible for 9/11. You know, the guys flying the airplanes were responsible for 9/11. What I'm saying is that this happened on George Bush's watch. And I wish he would have the courage. I wish he would be enough of a man to stand up. I know that sounds sexist, but whatever. And to stand up and say, you know, this happened on my watch. I bear some responsibility for it. Like
I agree wholeheartedly. And, you know, I agree with all the other points, especially about this new Israeli policy we apparently have. It's a disaster.
It's a mess. It's an absolute mess.
Yeah, Kerry in 2004.
Yeah, Matt, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Great
Thank
to hear
you very
from
much, Tom.
Okay.
Have a good day.
Yeah, you too. It's 20 minutes before the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. And Matt in Candia, New Hampshire, is on the line. Hey, Matt, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing? Happy Friday.
Well, thank you. Yeah, TGIF, Shabbat Shalom, whatever it is
that's
for
it, you. That's it. Hey, listen, I just wanted to make a couple comments on Matt's comments. You know, I mean, this whole idea that George Bush is responsible, you know, I mean, obviously, as you said, Osama bin Laden is ultimately the person responsible for this. But there's no question in my mind that George Bush had an opportunity to do something, and I feel that he missed that opportunity.
Yeah, instead he took a vacation.
Yeah.
I mean, a bunch of them. This guy has taken more. You know, the average American worker gets to take 2 weeks a year. This guy has spent 230. He spent 40% of his time in office on vacation. And they say, well, when he's on vacation, he's really not on vacation. Actually, turns out, in the case of George Bush, mostly, he really is on vacation.
That's
he
right.
goes golfing. He goes bass fishing. He, you know, schmoozes. Yeah. So it's,
One last thing, you know, about the idea that George Bush, you know, has compassion and is human. You know, I mean, look at, the, you know, we've had hundreds of Americans killed in this Iraq debacle, you know, and not to mention the many thousands of Iraqis as well. You know, and, you know, the idea that this guy has compassion is
you know what made me
ridiculous, I think ridiculous.
Matt, you know what made me so angry when I was watching his press conference that I was yelling at the television? And I should have recorded this and played. In fact, maybe we'll get but it's old history now, is when he, on three or four different occasions, talked about comforting the families.
Yeah.
This guy has never attended a funeral.
Yeah.
He
yeah,
has think, never I mean, attended a funeral.
And he disrespects the memory of these people by not allowing the press to cover them coming back in coffins.
I know. This was just the ultimate hypocrisy.
That just absolutely horrified me.
Yeah. It, me too. It was over the top. Matt, thanks for the call.
Thanks, Tom. Okay. Bye-bye.
Yeah. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 17 minutes before the hour. Jared in Collegeville, Pennsylvania is on the line. Hey, Jared, what's up?
Hey, Tom. How you doing? Love the show.
Thank you.
You know, I totally appreciate what you're doing here. I just want to bring up the fact that, you know, I've heard a lot about, you know, just the idea that we've been at war before 9/11 happened with these terrorists.
Yeah, it's a popular statement to make.
Yeah, especially, a lot of people, especially in the military, see death as a part of war. So, you know, that just, to me, adds fuel to the conspiracy theory.
What do you mean by that, Joe? You mean that within the government they were thinking, gee, we're at war, and so we're going to take casualties?
Yeah. Even maybe the people on September 11th were considered casualties in the whole war.
Yeah, I'm not willing to go there. See, I think that they're all being hyperbolic. I think they're all exaggerating. It was Louis Free, you know, he's a good Republican, even though he served under Clinton, going, well, we weren't on a war footing. And then, well, what's a war footing? Well, that's when you seal your borders. Well, we still haven't sealed our borders. We're still not on a war footing. You know, these guys are using language in a way that is not meaningless. There is no congressional declaration of war. Even with Iraq, there wasn't a declaration of war. And you know, there was this sort of war powers thing, but we haven't had a formal declaration of war against Osama bin Laden for sure. And they're you know, the war on terrorism, it's like the war on drugs or the war on illiteracy. It's a metaphor. And frankly, it's a bad metaphor. It's a metaphor that leads the rest of the Arab world, or the Muslim world anyway. You have to realize there's a lot of people who are not Arabs who are Muslims. It leads the rest of the Muslim world to say, you know, are they declaring war on us? Is this the Crusades again? I mean, it's a very bad choice of words.
Yeah.
Well, Jared.
Combine that with the Islamist socialist movement.
Yes, the great Islamo-socialist conspiracy.
That was great when I heard
Chuck
that.
Morse. Yeah, Chuck is incredible. We'll get him on again. He's so much fun.
Yeah, good.
Jared, thanks for the call. I got to move along. Thanks. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. If you'd like to be on the program today, Ken in Atlanta is on the line. Hey, Ken, what's up?
Hi. I just got a quick comment. I can't hang around because I'm on cell phone.
Uh-huh.
Listen to what the first guy said about them knowing about it and everything. The point I'd like to make, you said that they didn't expect it to be so successful.
Yeah, Okay, go ahead.
I'm sorry. It's one of those things where I can only hear one way on the cell phone.
I understand.
Before that date, Al-Qaeda's total death rate for domestic attacks within our borders was 6 people.
And worldwide, it was less than 50, wasn't it?
And right. And I think they took a calculated risk that we will ignore this, a few people will die, and we'll have our pretext for a war against Iraq.
Yeah, I agree with you. And if the World Trade Center buildings had not collapsed, the reality is that even with those two planes flying into them, a few hundred people would have died instead of thousands.
Right.
And so, even the engineers of the World Trade Center weren't. I know there are people out there who say, well, there are dynamite around the bottom. I don't think so. But, you know, I don't think anybody expected that that was going to happen. In fact, most of the deaths were not. I don't even think they were deaths that Osama bin Laden expected to happen.
I mean, right. I believe that, too. And PBS did a great special where they showed the engineering of the World Trade Center.
Yeah.
And the World Trade Center was basically built like one of those wire trash cans.
Yeah.
It was held up by its outside frame.
Yeah.
And not by structural members inside like most. So the collapse was fairly inevitable once that frame was lost.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. Ken, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman program, 12 minutes before the hour. Neil in Effingham, Illinois, listening on the Sirius satellite. Hey, Neil, what's up?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I got 2 points I'd like to bring up in regards to 9/11 and culpability.
Mm-hmm.
One is who was supposed to be in the 9/11? There were twin towers the day of the attack, and who wasn't?
Well, there was a bunch of people from the Pentagon who were supposed to be in New York who decided not to go that day. Or are you going to trot out the Israeli theory that is circulating in the Arab world?
Well, this is just information for information purposes. And then the other point is, what happened to our air cover?
Yeah. Well, let me just square that first, Neil. The Israeli theory has been completely discredited, as far as I know.
Well, I'm not aware of that. Just as an inquiring mind, wanting to know, I would like to know who was supposed to be in the building and who wasn't on the day of the attack, and also with this sophisticated air control system we have. What happened to the air cover when these planes deviated hundreds of miles off their original courses?
Yeah, well, oddly enough, a few months before 9/11, Don Rumsfeld changed the rules for intercepts within the United States to say that the low-level people couldn't order interceptions. It had to go all the way up to his level. He had to personally approve them, and he was not available until after the Pentagon had been hit. Now figure that one out. I don't, you know, it's more fodder for the, you know, conspiracy theorists, who may be right. Who knows? But Neil, thanks for the call. I appreciate your comment. Holly in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Holly, what's up?
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Holly.
I wanted to offer a resource for people who've been considering nonviolent resistance, and it's one you may be familiar with. The book is called "Is There No Other Way? The Search for a Nonviolent Future," and the author is Michael N. Nagler, N-A-G-L-E-R, and it's published by Berkeley Hills Books, and it's excellent. I mean, it documents cases of nonviolent resistance that have succeeded throughout history all over the world. Of course, they're not reported because they were nonviolent, so they don't make the news.
Right.
But it's a wonderful resource for people, And I agree that this is the time in history when we need to take seriously what Gandhi was teaching.
Yeah, and not just Gandhi, Martin Luther King, and
Absolutely.
All the way back to Jesus. You know, it's right there. Holly, thanks for the call. I'll check that
Thank
book
you.
Out. I'm not familiar with it. Is There No Other Way by Nagler, right?
Is There No Other Way by Nagler.
Great. Thank you very much. It's the Tom Hartman program, 10 minutes before the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective for
formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value. Absolutely free, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores? Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
New report shows energy development posing a growing threat to western trout streams. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Thousands of natural gas wells have recently been drilled in the Powder River Basin in northeastern Wyoming. They're extracting coal bed methane, a gas trapped between deep layers of coal. Drillers often have to pump briny water from the wells to get at the natural gas. The conservation group Trout Unlimited recently produced a report on the impact of oil and gas development on western public lands. Field coordinator David Stalling says water from coal bed methane wells can harm trout streams and other habitat.
That water they're taking out is real high in bicarbonates and saline, and they're pumping that into some of our rivers and aquifers. And we've already seen, for example, along the Tongue River in eastern Montana, there's been as high as a 75-80% decline in aquatic life. It's also changed the composition of the soil, allowing for noxious weeds to take over from native plants. So that has an effect on fisheries and other wildlife.
Stalling says Trout Unlimited is not opposed to oil and gas development in general, but he says the federal government should not open fragile lands to development.
There really is no lack of natural gas in the ground in places where they can already develop. A study done by the U.S. Department of Energy, for example, shows that 88% of the natural gas within public lands in the Rockies is already available for development. And so that can be developed, and in most cases, 60-something percent of that without restrictions. So we don't feel like they need to go into places like the Rocky Mountain Front or the Upper Green River Basin or the Rhone Plateau to meet our natural gas needs.
Trout Unlimited's report is available on its website at TU.org. That's TU.org. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
We're gone, my sweet baby, so strong.
Welcome to the real free speech zone. No chain link fence, no barbed wire, like George will put you in if you try to stand outside one of his fundraisers and hold a No Blood for Oil sign, Brett Bercy discovered. Then you get the pleasure of being prosecuted by Strom Thurmond Jr. Amazing. Blood money. ABC News reports an American mining company, Echo Bay, this is a quote from ABC News, was regularly paying Abu Sayyaf and other terror groups in the Philippines. This is the bunch that had been doing the kidnappings and murdering their kidnapped victims. Abu Sayyaf was regularly paying Abu Sayyaf and other terrorist groups in the Philippines in exchange for protection of its gold mining operations. We're looking into Dick Cheney bribing the Nigerian government, and now you've got an American mining company paying off terrorists in the Philippines. The company gave up to $2 million to the terrorist group, as well as providing them, quote, with weapons, medical treatment for the wounded, and access at times to a beachfront company guest house used to hide key terror leaders, end quote. Abu Sayyaf is a brutal, bloody terror group, which has been involved in the kidnapping and vicious killing of Americans, as well as Filipinos and a whole bunch of... But, I mean, you know, here, this is an American company. When one company employee tried to alert the company's headquarters in Denver, he was silenced. He was told... Here's a quote. This is like from the email, you know, from the message that came to this guy. You need to be more discreet in some of your observations regarding Corrupt Practices Act, etc. The distribution of such a report could be incriminating under certain circumstances. Just a little incriminating. And now we find out that with Boeing, you know, this Boeing boondoggle, turns out the guy who negotiated it, who worked for the government, later went to work for Boeing. What a surprise, just like the thing with Medicare. It's just going round and round and round. We got to stop this. We've got to change it. It's time to bring democracy back to America and get rid of this kleptocracy. Get corporate money out of government and bring the people, we the people, back in. And the beginning point of that is waking people up, and you're part of that process. Spread the word. Help people understand how these things work. This is Tom Hartman. Thanks to Louise for producing our show today, to Brad Walrod for editing our music. Thanks to our sponsors. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. Thanks to you for listening. I'll see you Monday.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program? Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Excuse me.
Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Had to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the new